Blog Talk Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Hey, I'm a little man. It's for the snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Well, that much I know. I'm sorry about that, folks. It's Recycle Radio. We're back on.
Okay.
had a little audio difficulty there. Sadly, today I have to report some horrible news. It's Recycle Radio right here live on blogtalkradio.com. And you can, of course, check us out on recycleradio.com if you wish. But I have some sad news to report today. An icon from my childhood has passed, and a very significant part of why I love sports is because of this man who I thought was a giant among men and a hero. And I say that because he was a good guy. He didn't even curse. You know, to be a baseball player in the excessive 80s and not to even use a profanity in the world of baseball where there's drinking and boozing and drugging, you know, and that's even some of the iconic players that we love and respect today. But this guy was a classic. He was a gentleman. He was a man's man. Had forearms like Popeye. And that legend, of course, is the former New York Mets catcher, Mr. Gary Carter. Now, oddly enough, I didn't even know that this happened until about an hour and a half ago. I hadn't really been watching the news today. I'd been online, but I wasn't really watching the news. I was just getting some well-needed rest and evaluating a couple of other things. So it was... It was just very, very sad to hear that. A lot of people, especially in the Boston area, they know who Gary Carter is. Especially, you know, I call him, he's the comeback kid for me in Game 6 in the 1986 World Series against the Boston Red Sox. It's the 10th inning. New York Mets are down by a score of 5-3. And it's pretty much a wrap. And in the 10th inning, Gary Carter hits that base hit. And he starts a series of comebacks for the Mets to win that game at home. It was Gary Carter, Ray Knight. Who's the next hitter? I'm almost certain it was Mookie Wilson. Oh, no, Mitchell. Sorry, I apologize. Kevin Mitchell. It was Gary Carter, Kevin Mitchell, Ray Knight, and Mookie Wilson. Those are the people who made it on base. Don't ask me how I remember it, because that's how important it was to me. The Amazons. That's how they got their nickname. And Gary Carter was one of the best catchers in the game. Went into the Hall of Fame and unfortunately died from brain tumors. And he was only 57 years old. And he's an iconic champion to a lot of people who were Met fans. JC, what did you want to say? Yeah, very
young. I just heard the real young.
Yeah, he was actually diagnosed with 4 brain tumors back in March of last year. And there was no real chance of him surviving. It was just a waiting game for him. So knowing that he was going to pass was probably a rough thing for him to go through. Knowing that you're going to die, we go through life, you know, as we go through life, we don't know what the future holds. But Gary Carter knew what his future held, and he silently went away. And he's a giant, and he's a man amongst men. And I'm sad that he's gone. For me personally, it means a lot because, you know, I really, really did love this guy. For a young kid at my age, I was 14, 15, when I really, really started to get into baseball. As a spectator, I played as a kid, and I stopped playing as many teenagers do. They get disenfranchised or disinterested in the game, and I did as I got older. I watched a lot of baseball when I was a kid. Of course, Reggie Jackson will always be one of my favorite Yankees. I lost favor with the Yankees once they got rid of Reggie Jackson because he was a hero. I was slighted when they got rid of Reggie Jackson. And so a guy like Gary Carter, who came in from the Expos in 1985, turned that franchise around. The Mets had not had a World Series since the year of my birth. So you can imagine how important that was to me as a New Yorker, and watching the Mets do what it is they did in 85 and then make it to the World Series in 86 and go after a team that had not had a World Series in 56, 57 years, the Red Sox, how important it was to both teams and to watch that. So Gary Carter, who, you know, they – I read a book, and I'll tell you this. It's a book that everyone should read. It's called The Bad Guys Won. And it really, really captures what the Mets were like as a team during 1985 and 86 season. It was probably one of the best books that I read about the Mets. Such a great book, so detailed. And I learned a lot more about Gary Carter than I ever knew in that book. So I just wanted to take some time today to recognize Gary Carter for making me a true fan of the game. I can honestly say that Gary Carter is my hero, and he always will be. And I will miss you. He is the kid. He had the smile that would light up a room and light up a diamond. And I got you here. I got you here. I'm just very, very proud to have witnessed your greatness on the field. So I just want to thank you. And so Gary Carter, dead at the age of 57, a legend, a Hall of Famer, and my hero. And just take a moment out there just to, if you're a sports fan, to just go out there and remember him. Go learn about him. He's a great ball player and a great role model for a kid like me and for a kid like a lot of people out there. All right. When we come back, we will start the show. I just wanted to do that just for him because I thought it was important. All right, we'll take a break. Hey, here's a song from that era. No, we won't play that one. Where's one from then? I don't have a song.
Why not?
No, I have a song. I have a song that I can play from that era. I want to make sure it's on the... Actually, yeah, this is from that era. Why not? This reminds me of my childhood. I think it's only right that I play this song. I think it's appropriate because he was a good guy. When I think of this song, I think of that whole era. Here's some Van Halen for you.
Hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America. that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom. Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, player, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
And we're back. It's Reese on the Radio. Broadcasting live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. I just want to make sure that I took that little bit of time to acknowledge a legend. And that's what it is, Gary Carter, dead at the age of 57, an iconic baseball player, who I like to say that I grew up admiring, just watching him play, watching him at bat, and, you know, he was a catcher of, you know, forget about it, Ron Darling, Doc Gooden, Jesse Orosco, Roger McDowell, just classic. And to keep the theme on sports, I just want to make sure that, look, before we end the show today, I'd like to get into the Asian phenom known as Jeremy Lin. I want to get into that today, and we will talk about Jeremy Lin and this insane sort of pandemonium that is Jeremy Lin, and talk about some of the controversies that have been happening along with Jeremy Lin. So we will get into that later on today. Because we can't get away from this story, it's very, very important that we continue with the Whitney Houston death and story. Because when someone dies, of course, every time you turn around, there is more and more controversy after the death, post-mortem, if you will. And there has been some issues that have come out that I find, in some cases, insane. Of course, Bobby Brown is thrown into the fray. Bobby Christina and her well-being has been thrown in the fray. Now New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is thrown into the fray. There have been some controversies there, and let's go through them one by one. Whitney Houston, a native of New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, grew up in New Jersey. The state of New Jersey and Governor Chris Christie have decided to fly the flags at half staff on the date of her funeral, which is this Saturday. And there's been some controversy. And I'm not exactly sure what the controversy is about or where it's coming from. What's the genesis of it, if you will. There was some woman who started some controversy because she's, you know, her son had died in war, and I don't know why this particular woman feels that a flag should be flown half-staff for her son, but she's taking umbrage with the fact that that will happen for Whitney Houston. Now, I can only assume because we think that Whitney Houston's death may indeed be drug-related, that it might be sending the wrong message. And that might be true, that might create some agita by some people. Are we celebrating the drug usage or the drug death, allegedly, of Whitney Houston. Some people have been suggesting that this is somewhat racist. I would tell them to check their history before they do that. JC, you have some very strong opinions about this and about the controversy yourself. I mean, is that the case?
Wow. That would be an understatement.
Well, I know that. What's your beef with the controversy?
Well, which controversy first? Well,
let's start with the one, of course, that I mentioned, the aforementioned flying the flags half staff. What is your beef with that?
I have no beef with that. I personally think it's a good idea.
Right.
I mean, you one would have to consider her legacy
mm-hmm.
for what she's done as a person, her charitable work. What her music has meant to this world,
mm-hmm.
I think that should outweigh any of her personal struggles.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to consider her drug problem a crime, well, it's not a victimless crime because she herself is the victim of it.
Right.
Who did she hurt but herself?
Mm-hmm. Right,
but she's meant a whole lot more to this world than what the drugs may have meant to her or may have affected anyone that has followed her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't recall her ever asking to be considered anybody's role model.
Mm-hmm.
She just happened to achieve that. She was painted into that light because of the music that she sang and who she was and how she carried herself. And I got to give her credit for that because coming from where she came from, clearly, no one would have expected it.
Right.
She was from the mean streets of Newark, New Jersey. Hood rat, if you will. Yeah, I mean, it's the truth. It's the truth. And if you listen to her interviews, especially when she was being defensive, I think probably one of the most iconic interviews that kind of shows you who she was as a person, whether she was high when she gave the interview or not, was her interview with Wendy Williams.
Right.
Where she had on several occasions during that interview told Wendy Williams, you know, I'll be waiting downstairs for you.
Right.
I'm from Newark, New Jersey.
Right.
I'll be waiting downstairs
right.
for you.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of those things that she, the antics, as it were, from Whitney Houston in the latter part of her life, you know, the 2002 interview with Diane Sawyer, of course, as you mentioned, the Wendy Williams radio interview that took place, I believe that was around 2003. In fact, I think it was the latter part of 2002, in fact, the Whitney Houston interview. And then her divorce or separation in 2006, which resulted in a divorce of Bobby Brown in 2007. And then her interview with Oprah Winfrey in 2009. The spectacle that was made of that has now become the overshadowing of her career. And it was Bill O'Reilly, who was on the Today Show this morning, who was talking about how her drug use and her downward spiral was being sensationalized, he talked about today in a heated discussion with Matt Lauer from the Today Show, that, you know, people were saying, you know, with all of that, with all of those debacles, as it were, in the past decade, should Whitney Houston have those flags flown half-mast for her funeral? And Bill O'Reilly said absolutely. He thought it should happen. And the reason why I don't believe that there should be a controversy of the magnitude that it is in any way is, one, because of others who have had this happen, and this is a state celebrating one of its own. I'm sure that Georgia flew their flags at half-mast at the passing of Ray Charles. This man was an admitted heroin addict. This man openly said during an interview, when asked about his drug use, what he would say to younger children about drugs. And he said, I couldn't tell kids anything about drugs because I use drugs. That he did not want to be a spokesperson for drugs or be anti-drug because of his own past. But I'm sure that Georgia did. The questionable lifestyle of Frank Sinatra. Had the flags flown at half-mast for him in New Jersey. And on the question of racism, and whether or not the outcry that people are having, or the criticism of this happening for Whitney Houston, saying that this criticism is because she's black, that they don't want the flags at half-mast because she's black, I would argue that Clarence Clemens, saxophonist for the E Street Band, Bruce Springsteen's group, just passed away last year or beginning of this year. Flags were flown at half-mast for him because the E Street Band and Bruce Springsteen, I mean, come on, he's called the boss. I mean, he's New Jersey's own. And this is the saxophone player, not Bruce Springsteen. This is his saxophone player. You
these
know,
are people, excuse me, these are also people that when they're out there, especially in a public eye, and they've made it to where they've got huge celebrity status, they've always bragged about where they come from. I mean, always when they encouraged others to do the same, look, I'm from here. I made it from here.
Mm-hmm.
You can too. I mean, they represent where they're from, good or bad, well.
Oh, certainly.
So
oh, certainly.
Why not where they come from be allowed to honor them?
Right. And that's the reason why most of this is a joke. It will blow over. I think the shock of Whitney Houston's death to a lot of people is the reason why there's been such this response in such a way. To move on to another controversy, look, I'm the first person to say that poor Bobby Brown is getting a bad rap. Bobby Brown has received a real bad rap over the past couple of weeks. The past week, I should say.
I don't think that that's going to go away.
You know what?
Clearly.
I know.
I mean, no matter what we may say or however we may feel, a lot of the influence over everything that goes on, especially with regard to this funeral, this memorial service, from here on out, it's going to have a lot to do with her mom. And she clearly wasn't a fan of Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
She has a reason. She has a reason, and I can't knock her for it.
Oh,
I can't knock her for it. The only thing that I can say is this.
Mm-hmm.
Your daughter stayed married to him for 15 years.
Yeah, but that's her baby. That's her baby girl, so she's going to be biased.
Yeah, but you know what? Your daughter wasn't a punk either.
No, absolutely. She was no victim in this.
No.
You know, she was no victim. You know, her relationship with Bobby Brown is her own, and she should, you know, be fully responsible for that relationship. But you know what? Everyone needs a villain when they lose someone that they love. In the way
I went through myself.
Yeah.
I'd look for when my mom passed, dude.
Mm-hmm.
When my mom passed, I was looking to sue any and everybody that I could.
Yeah, you look for someone to blame.
Yeah, I look for someone to blame.
Yeah, and again, that's what she's doing. She's looking for someone to blame. But here's where I've got a problem. The New York Post put this story out there with, of course, unconfirmed sources. And the New York Post article, what troubled me so much about the New York Post article was, of course, there were unnamed sources who said that Whitney Houston's mother did not want Bobby Brown to be a part of the funeral ceremony, which that's one. I can understand why the mother wouldn't want him there because there may be some animosity towards him. But they didn't just go so that far. Let me read the article. Bobby Brown is trying to leech on to Whitney Houston's fortune, the late singer's mom and other family members believe, according to a new report. Brown is attempting to get close to his daughter, Bobby Christina, who is the sole heir of his ex-wife's estimated $20 million fortune, in a bid to get his hands on the cash, family sources told TMZ. Her mother, Sissy Houston, is trying to stop Brown from getting close to the 18-year-old because she fears the rapper is broke, and just wants to line his own pockets, according to a source. Friends of the family already told Brown he is not welcome at the funeral or in Bobby Christina's life, according to TMZ. They believe Brown is responsible for the drug and alcohol problems both his ex-wife and daughter experience. Brown is aware of the family's feelings, but wants to bury the hatchet, according to sources. Brown released a statement Wednesday addressing his daughter's emotional stability and pleading for privacy. My daughter, Bobby Christina, quote, is doing much better, Brown said in a statement. We continue to provide love and support for Bobby Christina. She's dealing with the tragedy of her mother's death and would prefer to do it outside of the public eye. And as everybody knows, Whitney Houston was found dead. Anyway, the private service, which I will get into, is going to happen on Saturday. And I want to talk about that controversy as well. But here's where I have a problem, JC. Why would Bobby Brown get a rap for trying to be close to his daughter and then have it misconstrued as if he is trying to fleece his own daughter out of the $20 million estate, but just the day or so after she died, they criticized him for continuing to stay in Mississippi and do his concert with New Edition, saying that he should have left the show. I think it was even you who said it on this show on Monday. You said that he should have left and gone to go be with his daughter. And I said, well, look, he had a commitment. He was probably paid in advance, but he had a commitment, and that's why he stayed. And that's why he stayed, to fulfill his commitment. But my argument is why? Why now are they twisting and turning this? One moment, it's he should have left. The next moment is, oh, he's only coming so he could. Well, what is it?
Right. You can only have it one way. You can't have it both.
Yeah, it appears that they want it both ways. Oh, I think I lost you, buddy. Jay, are you still there?
Here.
Oh, okay. No, so
I'm here. I'm here.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. It's 1 minute, it's damn if you do, damn if you don't. Which bothers the crap out of me. You know, what is he supposed to do? We get it. People don't like him. But this is his ex-wife and this is his daughter, and he should be there to support her. Especially after her mother has died. Which is in and of itself crazy that anybody would suggest it, saying that he's broke. So what?
And I don't believe he's broke. I don't believe he's broke. He's been touring for the better part of the last 2 years,
right,
with Heads of State. Edition.
Is he performing in like Bahrain and stuff like that? Like, I know a lot of a lot of struggling artists do that. They can go and make a crap load of money going to play in Dubai.
Or across in the Arab countries.
And what did you say? What was the last thing you said?
In the Arab countries.
Yes, right. The United Arab Emirates. And, you know, it's not like this guy doesn't have a way to make a fortune or to make some money, be it whatever he does. So, I just find it odd. And, you know, TMZ, who's usually pretty good at getting its information, so it's hard for me to doubt that any sources are saying this or that family members are saying it. But, you know, again, you know, even if the mom is truthfully saying this, and if it's true, that's what it is that she believes, I think it's a bunch of malarkey on their part.
No question.
I think it's a bunch of malarkey. You know, you can't have it both ways. Bobby is either supposed to be there for his daughter, or if he doesn't show up, he's going to get criticized. It's a damn if you do, damn if you don't for Bobby Brown. And that's because, you know, he's so vilified right now as being...
You know, it's so weird.
Go ahead.
just as Whitney's music has spiked digitally,
as Michael Jackson's downloads. As Michael Jackson's did.
So has Bobby's.
Really?
Here. Yes.
No.
There's been a little spike in activity with regards to his music.
Do you think
I think that's just fan support. Well, what people fail to realize is New Edition, the entire New Edition family, mm-hmm. including Johnny Gill, who was a Johnny Come Lately to the group, they have a very, very, very loyal fan base.
Listen, I wrote this on my blog, and it's one of the most weirdest search things on Reese on the Radio. But I wrote an article on my blog that said I have a deep, dark secret that no one knows about me. And when you look at it, you know, people click onto it. And when you open it up, there are 4 music videos by New Edition on them. And I am a huge New Edition fan. I always have been. I always will be. Do me a favor, JC, if you can. Can you download... there's a song by New Edition called Sorry. You'll know which one it is when you get it. I totally have to play this song. It's one of my favorite songs, probably because the music video is one of my favorite music videos. A live performance. It's one of those live performance music videos that they're playing in concert. But if you could find that song, that's one of my favorite songs. And Bobby Brown isn't even part of the group then. I can't say that I had. Well, I will admit this. Their reunion album called Home Again, that album was my favorite album. There's a song called Try Again. See if you get these songs. Try Again, that's another one. And Try Again was another one. And it's sampled from an old Slick Rick record called... I can't even say it. I'll tell you later what the name of the song it is. A sample from the Great Adventures of Slick Rick. There's a song called Try Again. That's by New Edition. And Sorry, both of those songs, if you could get those. Because I'm a huge New Edition fan. I followed them probably later in their life. I wasn't part of the whole Candy Girl thing. I didn't like the whole you'll have to count me out. I didn't like that. I loved it when they... right around the N.E. Heartbreak era. That's when I became a huge fan of theirs.
Oh, no. Me long before that.
Well, you probably were there when they were being compared to the Jackson 5.
Probably a little after that. I became a New Edition fan when Bobby Brown first left the group and was going to Weaver High School, where I was attending.
Well,
when he left the group, he was being tutored at Weaver High School in Hartford, Connecticut.
I did not know that.
No, not too many people do. And the only
This is before the Don't Be Cruel album.
Before Girlfriend album.
Yeah, that's the Don't Be Cruel album.
No, Girlfriend.
Oh no, you're right. Right, Don't Be Cruel has My Prerogative on it. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
The Larry Blackman from Cameo influenced album, Girlfriend.
Right. Tenderoni was on Don't Be Cruel. Is that correct?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Hey, yeah. Mary, why you bugging's in the house? She got in late. That's okay. She's got more stuff going on in her life right now. Is it all right? Mary, we were talking about the whole controversy with the Bobby Brown not going to, you know, not being invited to the funeral, and we talked about the half mask thing, which a lot of people are criticizing New Jersey Governor Chris Christie about. But there is a third controversy that people are talking about, and JC and I don't know what JC's position on this. I got the impression he was saying something about this, but I don't have a great issue with this. They're going to stream the funeral online instead of broadcasting it on one of the networks, be it BET, MTV, VH1, or whatever. Fuse, even. Do you think it's a good idea to do it online as opposed to a major network?
Well, they're probably going to do it online because they know that no matter where people are, most people will be able to view that, whether it's on their iPhone, whether so people will. And when is the funeral taking place?
Saturday.
Well, most people. Okay, so most regular people are off on Saturday and Sunday, but lots of people are not. So, and regardless of where they are, you can tune in from wherever you are.
Yeah, but you can interrupt broadcasting on a Saturday. Saturday is not a huge broadcast day.
No, you can, but if you're not at home in front of a TV, if you're not somewhere in front of a TV, then you can't. I can understand if they were going to streamline it online and put it on TV.
Right.
But if you're only going to do one or the other, then streaming it online would probably be the best because it's going to be more accessible by people whether they're home or not.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But JC brought up something I thought was very relevant to them streaming it online. JC, I'll let you tell it. You said that you believe what's going to happen if they stream it online.
They're going to shut down all servers. No one's going to see it.
The server's going to crash.
Yeah.
But you know what, JC? I have to be honest. I don't think that's going to happen.
That's not going to happen. Why would that happen? I mean,
well, he's saying
the last biggest streaming event that they've had online,
right?
That didn't crash.
Right. You can think of the Victoria's Secrets show. You could watch that live online. The server crashed. There were a lot of other huge events that they did online and the server crashed. But here's why I don't believe that's going to happen with Whitney Houston. I believe that the Whitney Houston story has been so overdone that the only people who are going to be viewing are people who want to see which celebrities show up. They will turn this into
a lot of people.
Well, no, that's true. But I think they'll turn it into a red carpet event. But because I think that so many people are kind of over the over-broadcasting of this funeral, I think that a lot of people will not tune in. I don't think that this is going to be the fanfare that people are expecting.
Well, I think that if Bobby was going to be there, more people would watch.
Yeah, if Bobby ended up showing up there, if there was word out that said Bobby's there, yes, it would go.
Bobby should be there. I mean, you weren't pulling him. You weren't pulling them two apart when they were smoking crack.
Yeah.
So why are you pulling them apart now?
Because now they have the power to.
No, but they, come on, that's stupid.
They have the power to. She's gone.
They had the power to before, too.
No, now they have exclusive power.
Well, obviously.
You know, he can't supersede the family. You know, if he was still married to her and he was a rich man, he would have paid for this funeral and he'd have told anybody he wanted to, you're not allowed. He probably could have told Sissy Houston, you're not allowed.
Go fly a kite, he could have told her, yeah.
Exactly.
Had they still been married and he'd been broke. He could still tell Sissy go fly a kite.
Right, exactly.
I think it's stupid, and I think it makes the family look bad. Like, you know.
But no, because remember, they have the backing of the American public because more people overall blame Bobby Brown for her death. So Sissy's got the backing of those people who are already vilifying Bobby Brown.
You can't blame Bobby Brown for her death. Bobby Brown did not make her get high. Yes, he was a part of that, but they've been divorced for how long? And she's still getting high, or she was still getting high.
2007 is a long time ago. I mean, you're right.
So
it's like,
you can't. He didn't tell her to take these pills and lay in a bathtub and
this. You know, that's another amazing part about this, JC, that I find alarming. That here it is. In 2007, she divorces him. 2006, better yet, she separates from him. 2007, they get divorced. She does this interview with Oprah Winfrey in 2009. That's 3 years ago. She talks about how she's getting her life back on the ball. She has this great comeback with Clive Davis. She's, you know, performing overseas. Remember, all of this is the 2009 interview is pretty much to lay down the tracks, so to speak, to say, I am no longer Bobby Brown's wife. I am Whitney Houston. I'm back. I got my crap in order. There's nothing going to deter me. I am back.
I think the only reason why she divorced Bobby Brown was so that she could get herself back. I don't think it was necessarily because maybe she didn't want to be with him anymore.
But even if that's the case, but
they probably came to her and said, if you want to make money again.
Right, but she set the groundwork for that. Think about the groundwork she set for that. She separates from him in 2006, divorces him in 2007. She does this interview 2 years later with Oprah Winfrey, talks about Bobby Brown like a dog, says he spat on her, you know. Bobby Christina knows how horrible he is. She witnesses all of this vitriol, this constant battling between the two of them. She's moved on. She gets back together with Clive Davis. She's at the, you know, she's at the Grammy party that he holds at the Beverly Hilton every year, and she's back on the road. And turns out that all of what she said to Oprah Winfrey was bullspit,
First of all, anybody that watched the reality show that they had knows that Bobby Brown was not the only culprit.
Well, yeah, I know, but
in this nightmare that they lived together, because she was crazy.
But that's my point.
Whitney was a nut job.
She put Bobby out of her life. So if she continued to use drugs and alcohol post Bobby, no one can say that Bobby is the genesis of her behavior after she left him.
No.
Remember, she left him for her new beginning, so to speak. And
for her solo drug beginning.
Apparently it was nothing more than an opportunity for her to continue to use. So trying to blame Bobby.
And it was probably cheaper for her to use on her own.
On her own, by herself, yeah.
Then
foot the bill for two people. You're absolutely right about that. That's a little sad. But
eight ball of rock goes a lot further with just one person than two.
Wow, that's just vicious.
Well, it's true.
So anyway.
And had she left him for a musical good guy, like, say, for example, let's say Ruben Studdard?
Maxwell?
Maxwell's an abuser, too.
But he's fine.
For example, someone without a bad boy reputation at all, a Ruben Studdard.
Okay.
No. She leaves him for Ray J.
You mean somebody without any reputation?
King Porn himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Party.
Hooking up with Ray J did not solidify Whitney Houston as being a person who got caught up with a Bobby Brown type. She went right back into the arms of a self-admitted player.
Someone with a little less famous, a little less music on his repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. I mean, people don't realize when that Don't Be Cruel album, Don't Be Cruel was so huge for MCA Records.
Right.
It was probably their largest seller at that time.
That My Prerogative was a huge hit for Bobby when I heard that in order for Britney Spears to cover it, she had to pay everybody at MCA. I mean, she had to pay a lot of money to cover that. And, you know, she had the money to do it. So it was a huge record. I mean, Bobby Brown was considered, every time you heard his story in the news, he was referred to as the My Prerogative singer. You know, it just like Madonna is always referred to as the Material Girl.
Yep.
You know, and that's like the early stages of her career, but she's still referred to as the Material Girl.
And if I'm not mistaken, you might correct me on this one, I do believe that his album sales afforded MCA the money to buy Motown.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that.
I think you're probably right about that.
But yeah, but you know, again, to not have him there, that bothers me. So those are the controversies that I had an issue. Did I miss one? I thought I had four. I know I had three.
Well, and if he can't be there, then Bobby Christina shouldn't be able to be there either because she's a drug addict herself.
Well, you know, that's never, ever going to happen. I mean, so the three controversies were the flags being flown at half-mast, Bobby Brown's controversy on whether or not he should show up at the funeral, and, of course, the double standard when he doesn't go to his daughter's side. Okay, so it was Ford. When he doesn't go to his daughter's side immediately, he's criticized. He gets by his daughter's side. Now it was reported that he's only by her side for the money. And then, of course, the Internet thing, you know, and whether or not it should be streamed online. You know, I don't know about the thing crashing, but, of course, we will hear about that Sunday and report it here. Let me take a little bit of time because I said that I would get into this.
And you can send your emails to reselling radio@yahoo.com. I'm probably going to do a blog about this tonight, if not tomorrow morning, about Jeremy Lin. Because as we talked about earlier, Gary Carter has passed. And this is a story that, you know, again, as a basketball fan and as a sport fan, I wanted to make sure that I talked about Jeremy Lin, probably because I've heard so many people talking about him and talking about what he's done for the Knicks, 7 straight wins. Only one of the teams that they played was a team with a winning record. But yet his play and his performance has been astounding. And also, oddly enough, there has not been any criticism about him praising the Lord like Tim Tebow got crap for. Now, I don't know whether or not you know this, JC, or whether or not you know this, Mary, but before Jeremy Lin goes out to play, he and one of his cohorts, one of his players, they pretend to put on glasses. One of the players puts out their palms like this. Jeremy Lin looks down, flips like he's flipping through a book that the guy's holding. He reads the passage from the book, and then they point up to the sky. Jeremy Lin described that today on the Michael Kay Show and says that, you know, they asked, what's that little routine? Michael Kay asked him on ESPN, what's that little routine that you guys do? And Jeremy Lin says, well, we pretend to put on glasses. He holds the Bible. I flip through the Bible. I read a passage. After we're done with the passage, we take our glasses off and we point up to God. This is what he does before every game, before he gets out on the floor. Now, all Tebow does is get down on one knee after a play. Now, they call that genuflexing on Tim Tebow's part. Don't you think that this is – wouldn't you consider this more extreme than Tebow getting down on one knee praying?
But is he doing this in the locker room?
Whom?
Jeremy Lin.
On the court.
Oh.
Before the game.
Oh, on the parquet.
On the parquet.
I didn't realize. Yeah, no, I mean.
Where's the criticism of Jeremy Lin?
I don't know.
And that I find, and he's, again, devout Christian, Harvard graduate, and he's literally become the Tebow of basketball. But no crap about him genuflexing with the little routine and the Bible stuff. None of that.
Yeah, I haven't heard a thing.
Not one word, which I find incredibly odd.
And I've heard a lot of things about him, but never once was that mentioned.
Well, let me explain to you why that is. Because you know what more people are paying attention to, JC, and why I find the reason why they're not talking about the God thing?
I'll tell you why.
Tell me. You tell me.
Because of his race.
That's
and
correct.
The fact that he is so good at basketball.
That's right. Because he's Asian.
Right.
Now, did you hear about what Floyd Mayweather said about him?
Oh, God, what did that joke I have to say?
Floyd Mayweather said that the reason why that Jeremy Lin is getting all this attention is because he's Asian. And he went on to say, quote, there are black guys who've been doing this on the court for years, but they don't get the attention that Jeremy Lin is getting.
What black guys have been on the court doing this for years that haven't gotten that attention? Who? Michael Jordan? Who?
Kobe Bryant?
Magic Johnson?
Right.
I mean, what are they talking
about? We're too busy Harlem shaking it out there.
But, you know, that's funny because, okay, I will say this, though. Does Floyd Mayweather have a point? To a degree, yes, he does. Yes, there is excitement because he's Asian. Of course it is.
I don't even know if it's so much excitement. It's like...
He's got a problem with Asian people, period. That's his problem. He's afraid of Pacquiao.
Has issues himself. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
He's got a problem with Asians.
But it's – so I don't know if it's excitement. It's just like surprise that this Asian kid is so good.
Well, you know, don't forget, Yao Ming
– Was great,
was
too.
A great player that a lot of people – I mean, he had the best-selling jersey – at the beginning of his career, the best-selling jersey, of course, because he's from China. And, you know, there's 1.9 billion in China, so of course it was the best-selling jersey. But
and
I'll
you can get it for, you know, 2 cents on the dollar.
That's true. But I bet you the reason why Jeremy Lin has been getting the attention, here's why. Because Yao Ming
had one simple role. He was a center. All he had to do was be underneath the rim,
and
grab the ball, and
slam
it
and
down.
Slam it.
That's it.
But
so
that's not the case.
He was what I call in this business, in the business, the medium sports of all of it, in entertainment, that is. He was what I call a novelty. Now, why is he a novelty? What's the stereotype of most Asians? That they're short. They're known to be short.
And he was not.
And he was not. So for him to be that tall, that, of course, that raises eyebrows. Wow, an Asian guy 7 foot tall. You know, that raises eyebrows.
He was freakishly tall.
Yeah, it's freakishly tall for someone of his background. Asians are known to be very short. So that, of course, creates that sort of that sort of dynamic. Jeremy Lin, on the other hand, is doing things that are generally seen from players like a Kobe Bryant, a John Hall, even a Larry Bird. But as a guard, to see this Asian doing the things that you generally see, you know, as they consider the regular kids doing it or the regular guys doing it who are genuinely black. You never ever heard anybody say, hey, Steve Nash is a great player because you had Larry Bird before him. And you had Jerry West.
Player.
But of course he's a great player. So this is just one of those things. If Jeremy Lin was from India, he'd get the same attention that Jeremy Lin is getting. I mean, that as an Asian that he's getting. If he was Puerto Rican, he would probably get a lot more attention as well.
Because it's outside of what's considered
the norm, and that's what makes Jeremy Lin a novelty act. I hate to use the word novelty act in the sense that he's a flash in the pan, or you know he might really really be a
he's
good
a
player.
Stallion.
Yeah, but he might be a really really great player, and he's got an opportunity to do it. But I do believe, and I'm going to quote Whoopi Goldberg here because I would never do that. Whoopi Goldberg said today that the reason why so many people are amazed by Jeremy Lin is because he came out of nowhere. He was traded from two teams. No one knew who he was. He was about to be fired from the Knicks as a bench player because they didn't need him. Two of their star players come out. They find him. He's a diamond in the rough. Nobody knows who he is. And this kid comes out there and he shakes up the world. So
he did more than shake up the world.
Well,
I mean, when you're winning 7 games in a row and you're playing for the New York Knicks.
Right, exactly. A team that's been under par for such
for
a long time.
Of years.
Yeah, and then you have this kid come out of nowhere. You know he's a bench player, and he comes off the bench and he does something amazing. And so that's where, in general, that the excitement is for a player like Jeremy Lin. That's the bottom line. And I think it has more to do with the fact that he's a come-out-of-nowhere player who has sort of excited fans the way that Carmelo Anthony was supposed to, Amari Stoudemire was supposed to, and why am I forgetting Trevor's name? I'm forgetting his name. Oh, Tyson Chandler was supposed to. These are big-time players that people know, and this kid comes out of nowhere. Nobody knows him. He's got no, you know, God forbid, they actually just been printing jerseys of his name recently. The NBA has completely taken advantage. Not only that, here's another amazing thing, that not only the sales of his jersey have gone up, but the ticket prices on away games,
Have gone up
$100. They've skyrocketed just because they want the fans to come, even though he's playing their home team. People in the Asian communities are rushing to buy tickets for those games just to see him. So he's been.
I don't even know Asian people like basketball.
They love basketball in China.
They do. You'd be surprised. They can't play, but they love it.
But when we come back, I mean, I just wanted to make sure that I brought that up, and I think he's good for the game, and again, sometimes you need that sensationalism to happen in a game for people to really, really jump on board.
Maybe he'll be the Knicks' Eli for the Giants.
Well, listen,
Go ahead.
One thing I forgot to mention, what I wanted to mention last time, I know you haven't been going at the New Edition, sorry, but I found what has to be the absolute best rendition of I Will Always Love You.
I saw that. Let's get into that when we come back.
Okay. And the dude, it's amazing. Trust and believe.
All right, well,
and I love Jennifer I love Jennifer Hudson, but Jennifer couldn't touch it.
All right, we'll go to the top of the hour when we get back. Free Sunday Radio.
All right.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Hey, I'm a little man. It's
people
for the soul. And everywhere that Perry went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na da da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back on blogtalkradio.com/ReeseOnTheRadio. And, of course, don't forget to log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com tomorrow, where I will be doing a blog about the Jeremy Lin phenomenon. I've been giving you my take personally. There's some things on there that I can say that I cannot say here because it's my blog. I can do what I want to. We talked about Whitney Houston for a little bit. Let me hear a little bit of this. As JC said, this is the best rendition of I Will Always Love You. Who's the singer of this version?
Don't say it.
No, don't. Okay, don't say it. Will I recognize the voice when I hear it?
No, you're not going to recognize him at all.
The person's a no. I mean, sorry. Let me rephrase that. The person is an unknown.
Almost. Yeah, basically.
Let me see if I can figure it out. Don't say it.
All right, let's try.
If I should stay, I would only be in your way. So I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way. And I will always love you. I will always love you.
Okay, I wanted to get to that part of the song to see if she could belt it out. How old is this girl, JC?
She's probably in her 20s.
Oh, okay, so she's relatively young. What's her name?
Amber Riley.
Now, where would we know her from? Is she like an American Idol singer or?
No.
So where did you find
and
this?
Did you say Amber Riley?
Yes.
Is she Irish?
No. She's black.
So she is, well, Amber Riley sounds like an Irish name if I ever heard one. I can see where you got that from. So where did this come from? Is she just some internet girl or?
No. She's actually the chocolate, portly, chubby chick from Glee.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Oh. Okay, so the African-American heavyset girl from the TV show Glee, because I wouldn't know any of those actors' name on that show. But that's not
I'm
actually...
I'm surprised.
I don't know that show. Are you kidding me? Glee.
Yeah. But listen, when you get a chance, I mean, just listen to it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, every run she went for, she made.
Well, you know what? I do like her voice. Don't get me wrong. But I can hear a little bit of youth in her voice.
Yeah. Well, she's young. She's
and
young.
She's young. I can hear a little bit of youth in her voice. But I'll admit, that's probably the closest rendition I've ever heard of the song.
To Whitney. So, no, I mean, and that was recorded long before Whitney passed.
Right.
And it was actually used on the Valentine edition of Glee.
Okay, it's Valentine's Day.
Which is completely ironic.
Wow.
But when I heard it on Glee a couple of days ago, I said that's probably the best rendition I've ever heard, and I couldn't wait for it to go online.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's
the listen. And right now it is starting to go viral at the beginning stages of that song going viral.
How many hits on YouTube so far?
I don't know how many, but listening to the results, listening to the comments, reading some of the comments.
Right.
A lot of people believe that she should have done the Grammy. She should have done the Grammys tribute.
You know that's the reason why they didn't do that, because Jennifer Hudson, in a lot of ways, I think that the music world is really looking for a replacement for Whitney Houston, and I do believe that they were sort of kind of trying to inadvertently place Jennifer Hudson in that role.
But Jennifer Hudson can't touch Whitney Houston.
Oh, by the way, there was a fourth controversy I did want to bring up about Whitney Houston's funeral. Did you hear this? This is the one that baffled me. Kevin Costner to speak at Whitney Houston's funeral.
Not a problem.
Really?
No.
Really?
No. Well, okay. They just put the Glee up 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
And almost 1.2 million.
Oh, that's not bad. That's great.
Well, okay. And it's up on different. It's up in different versions.
Right.
Some with them without the actual video.
Oh, okay.
And they're all over a million.
Wow. Anyway, Kevin Costner will reportedly speak at Whitney Houston's funeral on Saturday, two decades after he starred opposite the singing superstar in The Bodyguard. The 1992 movie was Houston's film debut, and its soundtrack, which featured her signature rendition of I Will Always Love You, sold more than 17 million copies in the United States alone. And Kevin Costner played a bodyguard tasked with protecting Houston, who starred as a pop singer, Stretch, threatened by a stalker in the romantic thriller. People magazine, citing a family source, said Costner planned to speak at an invitation-only service for Houston in her childhood church of Newark, New Jersey. Other entertainment industry heavyweights reportedly will participate in the funeral. They include the expected people, Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder.
Well, the chilling circuit.
Yeah, exactly. And Clive Davis. They do say that Jay-Z, Beyonce, Elton John, Oprah Winfrey, Bill Cosby are also invited to attend, but no confirmation here has been made, according to the Star Ledger. It's remained unclear if Houston's ex-husband, Bobby Brown, would be in attendance, though People magazine sources said he planned to be at the funeral. Bobby Brown was married to the singer for 14 tumultuous years. How were they tumultuous?
I don't get it, but you know what? It's been confirmed by Universal Group, who's currently got the New Edition tour out right now. He will be here on Saturday.
So he will be at Mohegan Sun?
Yes, he will.
All right. I wish that I could be there to actually see that. That's, again, as I said, they're one of my favorite groups. I've got to get James on the phone because he promised me that he was going to give us some Therapy Thursday today. Another Idol contestant fainted on stage? Jesus, I don't even get into that. One of the stories that came up actually this today was this story. And as often as we talk about how it is that you should chastise your child when they do something wrong. Now, we talked about the Facebook dad, and you folks, you guys remember that. The Facebook dad who found a Facebook posting by his daughter, Hannah, Timothy Joseph, read a Facebook posting from his daughter when he was fixing her computer, took her computer, grabbed a camera, showed everyone or read everyone the daughter's Facebook posting, language-filled, and then shot the computer 9 times and told his daughter that she had to buy her own computer and to pay him back $130 to replace the software that he had uploaded onto her computer. Now, although he did receive some a visit from police and a visit from Child Protective Services, most people have been agreeing with the father and the way that he dealt with his child.
Absolutely.
But then this story came out, and I'm torn. And I hate it when I'm torn because I don't know how to respond to this. And Mary, I know you haven't heard this story, so I'll let you listen to it yourself.
She did the right thing. She knew that I've been sitting at the rest for 5 days, so she didn't do no wrong. She made me walk. I just had to walk. They should never pick me up. I could have walked by myself.
Niquavion Borders is a fourth grader and micro society magnate in Jonesboro. The school recently suspended his bus riding privileges for the fifth time for yelling. He now realizes why his mother wanted to teach him a lesson. On Monday, his mother, Valerie, ordered him to walk to school, almost 5 miles from their home on Fairview Drive. When he got to Highland and Stadium, he crossed the Liberty Bank parking lot. A security guard saw the boy, apparently surprised to see a child in the area alone.
Ask yourself a question, is that safe for the child? And if you wouldn't want your child doing it, you probably, you know, we probably don't need somebody else's child doing it.
Sergeant Lyle Waterworth says the guard called Jonesboro police, and then officers took the boy to school. They contacted his mother, and soon after, cited Valerie for endangering the welfare of a minor in the second degree.
If we see a child, and we see the child out doing, out in a location where they shouldn't be, feel free to call the police. That's what we're here for. And we want to keep the kids safe.
She should not be going to court. I learned that lesson. That was me that was
being
suspended
off the bus. 10-year-old Niquavion spoke on his mother's behalf, saying he doesn't want her to get into trouble for him misbehaving. He says he knows now to behave better on the bus.
Just get on the bus and sit down.
So if you couldn't hear what the young man was saying, he was saying that he was acting a fool on the bus. He did know that he was acting.
Go ahead. Excuse me, I don't mean to cut you off.
That's all right.
The reporter was basically repeating everything that the kid was saying because it was kind of, he was speaking kind of low and muffled.
He's a very, and it's so amazing. That's the part that I find a little troubling about this, JC, is that the boy was so reticent in speaking to the cameras, but here's a boy who was who was kicked off the bus 5 times for yelling.
Right.
He was so reluctant to speak to cameras. So the breakdown was he had been suspended. He had been kicked off the bus 5 times. This had happened to him. The mother was finally fed up, and she was saying, that's it. You're walking to school. I'm not driving you. I'm not taking you. He's 9. Now,
he's 10.
I'm sorry. He's 10 years old. He's a 10-year-old boy. So here's where it gets bad. His walk to school
is 5 miles.
5 miles.
No.
I'm with
so.
You on that one. Yes. No.
And I didn't
say
so.
Yourself on the bus, you wouldn't have to walk fucking 5 miles.
Hey, you can't curse. That's okay.
You wouldn't have to walk 5 miles.
That's a.
You walked that twice. You learned a lesson.
Yeah. Exactly. But the boy has obviously said that he's learned a lesson, that he walked 5 miles. He barely made it 5 miles on the first trip until he walked through the parking lot and then somebody stopped him. Now, here's where I'm torn, because I watched the little boy in the video, and he's clearly remorseful for his actions.
Yeah.
He's clearly torn up. And again, I think what he saw. Now, here's an opportunity. Now, think about what I'm saying here. Here's an opportunity for that young little boy to side with police, child services, the reporter, whomever, to side with them and go, yeah, Ma, you made me walk 5 miles. My mom is mean. And he could have played victim. But he didn't.
No.
Now, his mom is in trouble. And what does he turn around and do? He turns around and he says, look, my mom didn't do anything wrong. I screwed up here. I was the one who got kicked off that bus. And my mom was trying to teach me a lesson. And I had to walk to school. And now I know that I've got to be quiet. I've got to sit on the bus and I've got to be quiet. I've got to do what it is that I'm supposed to do the next time that I get on the bus. But here's the reason why I'm torn. 5 miles is a considerable amount of. You know Manhattan, and I said this to JC earlier. We're talking about walking from Washington Square Park to 100th Street. It's 5 miles. It's 100 blocks. That's a long way for a kid to walk at 10 years old.
And where was this at? Where did this take place?
Was this North Carolina?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it was in North Carolina.
I mean, where do they even have blocks?
I don't think that they do, and that's why he was taking a shortcut.
It was long roads.
Yeah, it was long roads, and he was taking a shortcut through a parking lot, which is why the security guard even saw him. So security guard saw him, and after the security guard sees him, he was the one who contacted police. And again, I don't hold anything against the security guard. He sees a lost boy, and another very important factor about this. Very important fact about this. As much as it's been complained about how young black children are ignored by our society in cases where there are missing children or kidnapped children or sexually abused children, all that, you know, like we were talking about a couple of weeks ago with Esapatha Murkison and Chris Cuomo,
our
who did that show, where they did that TV show, said, help us find our own or our own missing,
our
whatever.
Own missing or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that. They were talking about how people have neglected missing African-American children or children of color. He was a security guard working at a bank who saw this little boy and took action and treated him like any other kid that he would see walking alone. He was concerned and he contacted the police. So I look at that in some saying, I'm saying, you know, look, you can't really, I mean, yes, of course, they feel as though she, you know, she violated the child in some way by putting him out on the street to walk 5 miles. That's where I think, I mean, like I said, I'm torn about whether or not what she did was cruel and unusual. But, if I were to make him walk 5 miles, I would probably follow him. I mean, wouldn't you?
I definitely would not allow my 10-year-old child to walk 5 miles.
Well, you got to see the video, Mary. You got to see the video. I mean, for a kid of his age, the concern that he showed about his mom potentially getting in trouble.
Right.
I mean, it far exceeded any kid that normal age.
Yeah, I don't think that in any time in my life, I think that no time when I was 10 years old, I ever walked 5 miles. I probably walked the longest a mile. And not just to school. I'm talking about running around, playing as a kid.
Away from home.
Yeah, walking away from home, going to a friend's house, probably playing in the neighborhood, going to the neighborhood park. I don't think I've ever walked 5 miles. I've probably walked, as a kid, it probably felt like 5 miles to go a quarter mile because I'm so small. You know, but 5 miles for a kid who's 9 has got to seem like forever. I mean, 5 miles is a far place to drive.
It is a far place to drive, and but it's safety. You know, that's it's not so much the length of the walk. It's why would you make your child walk all the way to school 5 miles from where you live by themselves at that age? What happens if somebody comes up and snatches them? What happens if a car veers off the side of the road and hits them?
Okay.
I mean, come on. You just don't do that. There was a better way for her to punish him, not to make him. That was kind of militant.
Well, no, I think the better punishment should have come from the school itself.
And no, the school
kicks a 10-year-old off of a bus?
Yeah,
especially a 5-mile bus trip. That should have been thought of to begin with. What if she didn't even have a car?
This is true, but then she should have contacted the school. And maybe she did, maybe she didn't. I guess we don't know that. But I was going to make a point, and you interrupted me, JC, and got me all off track.
That's how we.
I agree that it was cruel and unusual to make them walk 5 miles. Had it been a mile, I probably wouldn't be so. I want to use the word so.
Split. I guess that's the best way to put it. I'm conflicted is the best way to put it. I wouldn't be so conflicted if it wasn't 5 miles. I would probably not be as conflicted if it was 2 miles. But the fact that it was 100 blocks is a considerable distance for a 10-year-old boy. And that's where I'm a little, I don't know, that's where I guess I'm somewhat split down the middle. Now the boy realizes it. I guess in some cases you have to go extreme. But let me ask you guys this question. Which is harsher, shooting your 15-year-old daughter's laptop with 9 rounds of a .45 or making a 10-year-old walk for 5 miles?
The walk.
There's potential harm there. You're taking a 16-year-old, 15-year-old laptop out in the backyard on your own property where you pay rent or mortgage or taxes, whatever, taking your pistol, shooting up the laptop. You're not endangering anybody. You don't do that to a child. I think that she endangered that child, and I wouldn't stand for it. I mean, and the fact that the boy is saying, like, first of all, what kind of sense does she have? Obviously not much, because she didn't even get on with the media and say anything. He's speaking for her. So now you made your kid walk 5 miles to school, and now you're making him get on camera or get on audio and talk for you. You should have been grown enough or mature enough to get on and talk for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't put that responsibility on a 9-year-old. So what? They were noisy on the bus. They got kicked off the bus. You take their PlayStation or something away from them. You don't make them walk 5 miles and then get on with the media and say, I'm sorry, it wasn't my mommy's fault. I'll be better from now on. That was heartbreaking when I heard that little kid.
Yeah, that's the part that caught me the most. I was so heartbroken that little boy speaking for his mom and saying that, you know, she was trying to teach me a lesson, you know, and I won't do it again.
And he took responsibility.
He took responsibility.
Yeah, that. But see, for a 10-year-old to take responsibility for me, forget about it. That's an anomaly in and of itself, that a 10-year-old would be personally accountable for his own actions. So I do have to say this. That mother is at least teaching him harsh lessons. And it's working to the point where he took personal responsibility and said, I'm here speaking on behalf of my mother. It's a grown-up thing to do for a 10-year-old to do that. See, this is, again, why I'm conflicted. Because, yes, the punishment was harsh.
but it didn't backlash. The boy didn't turn around and become one of those kids that said, oh, I'm going to hide around the shroud of everyone else's disappointment of my mother, and then be like, you know, everybody's saying, this poor boy, his mother treats him cruel. The little boy got up there and defended his mother's action. My mom needed to make a point. Yes, it was rough, but I don't think she should be punished for it. And that says a lot for that 10-year-old boy. That's why it struck me at the heart.
But that could, but that in the same token, that 10-year-old boy could be saying, oh, my God, please don't do anything for my mother, because if you think that she made me walk 5 miles to school after being noisy on the bus and getting kicked off the bus, I won't be standing here.
See, I knew you would say
in a couple of months from now, because she might hang me in my room.
I knew you would say that, because you know, I knew you were going to make this into.
There may be some boot camp that she.
So you're saying that the reason why he stood up for his mom,
maybe
because
she,
he was scared
at the retaliation. And if even if it wasn't that fact, even if the fact is, first of all, why is this 9-10-year-old boy so freaking mature? What is going on in your home that this child is that mature that they can come out?
Oh, maybe something good.
Well, but you shouldn't be at that level at 10. You really should not.
No, I'm not
saying it's anything. It's not that it's something bad, but you shouldn't be put in those predicaments at that age. A child should be a child. You should be allowed to be a child. You shouldn't have to do grown-up things. It's just that way.
JC?
Well, I think where she made her mistake was, after the second time, she should have put boots to ass. It shouldn't have gone 5 times.
Yeah, it probably should not have made it.
Somebody should put boots
times.
To her ass for making him walk 5 miles. That's what somebody needs to do.
Yeah, I know you should say that. See, I was stunned that you would take the opposite direction.
Well, of course she would. She's married.
I really, really thought that you were going to go another direction.
What direction did you think I was going to go?
I kind of thought that you would...
I was going to agree with her?
No. I don't know. I thought for some odd reason that you were going to...
You thought that maybe there was some bleeding heart liberal still within you.
Yeah, I thought that you... No, not really. I thought in this particular case, I really, really thought you were going to do Mary. I have to be honest with this. I thought that you would take this as an opportunity to say, this was a product of good parenting and going the extra mile to discipline your child without having to beat them or put your boots to ass, as JC so eloquently
put. I believe in boots to ass. I mean, if you do something wrong, come on. You can't make this kid walk 5 miles to school, Reese. Give me a break.
Look at the result of what it is that she did.
We don't know. That could all be a farce. That could be a farce, protecting him from getting...
Just speaking as if she's got a torture chamber in there waiting on him.
I mean,
she probably does. She was torturing him by making him walk to school 5 miles.
I don't believe that. One.
It went on for 5 times, Mary.
5 times.
If you had a torture chamber, it would have gone on the second time.
That's right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
I know. It wouldn't have gone on at my household the second time.
Well, that's why...
I'm going to get up and take you to school in the morning.
Yes, and she wouldn't have had to make him walk 5 miles and get a dumb butt in trouble.
Listen, in the immortal words of Miss Whitney Houston, oh, hell to the no.
Oh, hell to the no.
Was I going to get up and take you to school after you done got kicked off the bus the first time?
Right, exactly. Anyway, we'll take a break when we come back. It's post-Valentine's Day, and I saw this story. And, JC, we don't have the audio to it, but you let me know whether or not we do when we take a break. This was something that I really want your opinion on, Mary, when you hear this. What? I'm trying to phrase this correctly. What risk would you take to spice up your love life? Would you risk your life?
It's there.
My question, would you risk your life to improve your relationship? When we come back right here on Reese Thunder Radio.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force.
Oh, we gotta go up.
As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Huh? Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
What's up, folks? We're back. It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. You can send your emails to reeseontheradio@yahoo.com. Check out Reese on the Radio whenever you like. The number is 347-308-8701. OK,
Therapy. I got one of my favorite songs up. We'll get into that later on. It's Therapy Thursday, so you know we'll be getting into our little therapy session. I will not actually have anything for Therapy Thursday today, believe it or not. Because I always have some issue. But this story, the only reason why it intrigued me was because I was wondering, like, I like relationships just as much as anybody else. You know, I like being with a woman, I'll admit, I don't go the extra mile. And yes, there is a pun coming. I don't go the extra mile in any direction, much less up in the air. So when I saw this story, I was a little intrigued. Why was I intrigued?
Were you intrigued to go the extra mile?
No, hell no. I was intrigued because I can't believe anybody would do it. So I'll let you listen to the story, Mary. You tell
me. Speaking of love, it's one of our area's most exclusive clubs, and someone you know might have already joined, but it's certainly not for everyone.
The so-called Mile High Club is having sex on a plane, and one local air company provides the opportunity to do just that for tri-state thrill seekers. My news anchor Lance Berry has an inside look at one of the area's best-kept and most controversial secrets. Well, it all began as a dare. A group of pilots gathered around a hangar at Lunkin Airport, challenging one of their buddies that he couldn't even get one couple to pay to join the Mile High Club on his plane. But that was 21 years ago. Today, and thousands of customers later, those so-called flights of fancy are now nearly half of his business. But as you're about to see, what happens behind the pilot's curtain? Well, that's none of his business. Sightseeing takes on a different meaning on board this flight. Welcome to Cincinnati's Flamingo Air, where turbulence is expected.
I've had a high heel in my ear once, and shot in the back of the head with champagne cork. Thank God we wear headsets.
And those are just some of the stories the pilots are willing to share. But many others, as well as the Mile High client list, will stay in the cockpit forever.
What goes on behind the curtain is no concern of ours. It's a matter of professionalism, and I think that our customers really expect that.
The company's Mile High offering, a booming business.
Flamingo Air, how can I help you? We've done as many as 8 in one day.
And they have a monopoly.
We're the only ones in the entire United States.
Sharon McGee is the co-president of the company with her husband, Captain Dave McDonald. She books the flights.
Probably 90% of these that are booked by women. Sometimes they're trying to spark the relationship. Some of them are trying to save their marriage.
Inside this Cherokee 6, space is tight.
People get creative.
You're going to have to be, I guess.
Right.
The plane is so small that getting cozy is almost a must. At the center of the plane, a cushioned love seat, as well as champagne glasses and a box of chocolates. The rest of the hour is up to you.
We play up the romance. It's not the down and dirty, let's go have sex in an airplane, you know. It's the romance of it. And that's why we get the champagne and the chocolates.
You can even set the flight path, with many Mile Highers picking tri-state landmarks to fly over. Is your love a Reds fan? Hit a home run over Great American Ballpark. Football more their thing? Score a touchdown above Paul Brown Stadium.
If they want to fly over something, point it out, but generally they're occupied with other things.
The only thing separating you from the pilot is a small curtain and his discretion.
He has no clue what's going on in the back because he's got headsets, he's flying the airplane, he's talking to air traffic control.
As for Cincinnati's conservative reputation,
outside on the street, boy, we are conservative, but you close those doors and Katie bar the door.
And for one couple, the memory of the flight of fancy they took remained well after their hour-long flight was over.
They just had a wonderful time, and that was in the summertime, if I remember. The next summer, they brought a little guy by and said that he was conceived in the airplane.
Lance Berry, 9 News.
So the story is, this is a small Cherokee plane, much less like a Cessna. And you know those little, you know, puddle hoppers. And the pilot is literally a foot away from you in front piloting the plane. You are sitting in the back seat where there are two seats there, and you fly up in this plane, and we're talking about two chairs very close-knit to each other.
No, it's not two chairs. It's a love seat.
Whatever. It's just two chairs. It looks like a love seat, but the way they fashioned it, but it looks like two
little
chairs.
Little folding bench, actually.
Yeah, it looks like folding benches. So the two are sitting, are supposed to be there, and they're supposed to fly up in the air and, you know, consummate their marriage or relationship or whatever it is. As they fly above the Cincinnati area.
Three moons over Cincinnati in one night.
Now, this is why. Now, you heard what the woman said. The woman said that 90% of their customers who call to have this Mile High Club experience
are women.
Are women.
Mm-hmm.
Mary, I have to ask, is this the kind of thing that you would do, or did you think women would do? Like, why would women want
to
do this more than men? To save? I'm not. I would never, ever once think that I should fly in a plane in this puddle hopper. I mean, come on, it's no bigger than a bathroom, this plane.
Have you ever been in the back seat of a car? What the hell is the
difference? I wish that you heard what she said. Have you ever been in the back seat of a car? Yes, I have. Usually driving through the Lincoln Tunnel, but that's why I sit in the back seat, because I don't own the car. But not to do anything. I just want. I would never ever.
I don't love her.
The point is that I wouldn't be doing it in an airplane fly. I would be too nervous about flying. I would not be.
And, you know, you wouldn't be able to perform.
Yeah, I couldn't perform under those conditions.
Because
I know that the little Cessna is flying around, bumping all through the air and the turbulence, and I'm in an airplane that at one particular point or any particular point can fall from the ground.
Well, at least you'll be a happy camper.
I wouldn't be happy.
And the only area that you have to stretch out in looks like a coffin.
Yes, that's it. The plane looks like a coffin. That doesn't help it. But the bottom
line doesn't help at all.
That this thing is a propellered plane.
A propellered plane.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you think it was? This isn't a.
It's perfect answer to that.
Okay, I want to hear this.
If you're going to do this in a plane,
mm-hmm.
make sure you and the girl you're with, whatever, has on black underwear. Because if the plane goes down, the first thing they look for is the black box.
I cannot believe that she actually just said that.
I love her. I love her.
We are so done with this conversation. The black box? Goodness gracious. Just got R-rated in here.
Like it wasn't R-rated prior to that.
Yeah,
okay.
It was. Exactly.
So
would you do it?
Yes, you would.
Not in a propellered plane. I would be too nervous about that. Now, if we were in a jet.
A Learjet, yeah. Victor Newman's.
What was that?
Victor Newman's Learjet.
Yeah, I'm not flying in this little.
Yeah, I wouldn't
plane.
Do it in a putt-putt. And I don't know if I would be very comfortable with there being this pilot just a curtain away.
Well,
it looks
pilot,
like a New York City cab driver.
Exactly. It's like being in a cab because the pilot is only wearing headphones and his little, you know, and his little microphone.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're saying
well,
that
what
he
happens
can't
if
hear
he,
anything.
No, he, yeah, they can hear you.
I know they can
they
hear you.
They have to hear you. And what happens if the pilot gets really excited?
and grabs the wrong gear shift.
Yeah.
You
know, I mean, I would have no problem having sexual intercourse on a regular plane. But I'm not getting on a Cessna or a propeller plane or a helicopter doing the deal. No, I wouldn't.
So, okay. Don't you find it a little odd that 90% of women are into this?
No, because women will almost do anything to either save their marriages or start this you know, wonderful. Women, us women probably feel like for men, the most important thing in the relationship is sex, 9 times out of 10.
That's what women believe about men.
Most of the time, yes. That if you can get them going sexually, everything else will fall into place, which is half truth and half untruth.
I don't think there's any truth to that at all.
Because
none.
The only
no.
thing that you have going for you, then you have nothing else. And eventually that is going to die down. I don't know. I mean, I don't know why most women are... I don't know why 90% of them are women. I don't get it. I don't see what the thrill is. Not being up in no little, you know, in no little tiny tot, having and how you can't be with a man that's tall, or you can't be overweight.
It's shaped like a coffin.
So do they have parachutes strapped to their backs?
I'd have to.
Because I would too.
I'd have to.
There would be no way.
No, see, this was another thing that I found was an oxymoron. The reporter says what? The reporter said something about, you know, is she a Reds fan, a Cincinnati Reds fan? Score a home run. I mean, is she a Cincinnati Bengal fan? You know, score a touchdown. He makes that reference. But if you're in the back of a plane having sex,
are you going to time that?
Yeah, you mean looking over just like, you know, having sex looking at the ballpark?
Or is the pilot telling you when you're about to fly over, get ready?
And if you're doing worse?
Yeah.
They've scheduled at times 8 a day.
Yeah,
there's a sanitary issue there.
Yes, that's exactly what
We're
I was
talking saying. Back-to-back 8 a day.
That in and of itself sounds nasty.
Haven't you guys ever heard of sharing is caring?
No, I'm not sharing. Yeah, not sharing. I am definitely not sharing. So no, I found this story to be a little odd.
I want to know why these women are doing it. Now I'm curious. Like, I want to know what are you at the ends of your, and if you're at the ends of your relationship, how much does this thing cost?
You know, they didn't talk about that, Jason.
Yes, they did.
They did. What was the price?
Yes. $425 per flight.
Wow.
If I don't know if you're going to be with me anymore, I'm not delving out.
What a hell of a place to dump somebody, right?
Yeah, but you know what? For that price, I mean, wouldn't it be better to just, you know...
get a nice hotel room?
Yeah, and get some champagne and some petals.
No, better yet, spend less than $50, buy a new bedspread and an outfit, and fake rose petals and French maid outfit. They're cheap.
What'd you say, French maid outfits?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there are plenty of things that you could do for that kind of money. I don't think that, you know, you have to risk your life in an airplane.
Are they, I mean, do you think that there's a fact, do you think that it plays a factor that you, that this pilot is there and can possibly hear you as well? Is it like some, your semi-public event?
Yeah, I think that that's...
Well, when you're a teenager, that kind of doesn't matter. When you're young, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, but you know
when
what? I know a lot of women... who, you know, always talk about how adventurous they are and always talk about, you know, having sex outdoors or, you know, sneaking into
movie theaters,
right? I mean,
possibly doing something where you can almost get caught.
One of the greatest stories I ever heard in relation to sports was this story. I was reading Maxim magazine a couple of years back, and Maxim magazine had it was football season, of course, and they were talking about I think it was like the top 20 greatest fans in the NFL, and so they had all of these things that, you know, fans would do in relation to their team. Now the number one team where they had the best fans ever is usually
Cincinnati Bengals?
No. It was based upon what it is that the fans would do in adversity or, you know, whatever the situation was. So how the fans responded, whatever it was. So the number one team was the Buffalo Bills. So when you read the team, then you read the paragraph on why they were voted number one. And the reason why they were voted number one was they were talking about a game in the 80s that the team had sucked that year so bad. And a couple had gone, like a place was barely, you know, filled. And a couple had gone all the way up to the top tier of the stadium and decided to have sex up on, you know, up there.
In the bleachers, and fans
stopped watching the game that the Buffalo Bills were losing and were cheering on the couple.
And they didn't get arrested?
And I don't know if they got arrested. They didn't point that out in the article, but in the article they talked about how fans just stopped watching the game, in that section at least, that large section. They stopped watching the game and were cheering on the fans. They said it was a better show watching them have sex than to actually watch the game.
Well,
they
you're at a Buffalo Bills game, I'm sure.
Yeah, but...
And, I mean, you could watch two frogs have sex and it'd be a better game than... It'd be more entertaining than the
Bills. And I was saying to myself, I'm going, you know, I don't... Like, I don't play the outdoorsman thing. I don't do that. I just don't believe in it.
Well, but for people like that, they want to be adventurous. They have clubs for that. You can pay to get into a club, and people can stand. You get these little rooms, and people can stand outside of the room and watch you and your partner.
Really?
Why
do you know this?
Because I've been there.
No.
Oh, yes.
You have?
Oh, most certainly. It's amazing.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No. Okay, now we have to take another direction on this one. So you actively went to a club to watch other people engage in the act where you watched?
Yes.
And you enjoyed this?
And you cannot get into these places if you are a man by yourself.
You can't get in.
You can't get in. You have to be accompanied by a woman. Whether you're together or not, you have to be accompanied. And there were men in the parking lot because there was three of us females by ourselves. And there were men in the parking lot that were actually telling us, we'll pay for you to get in. We'll buy you drinks, whatever. Can we just go in with you? So, of course, we let them pay for us to get in, and, you know, they bought us drinks and stuff. But people were doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, the waitresses and the waiters were dressed up in, you know, all types of different lingerie, and people were touching. And now I didn't see anybody actually having sex.
What'd you say?
Lots of other things.
Oh.
There was no, I saw no penetration.
So there's no full-on sex?
No, I didn't see that.
Okay. Are you saying that...
But that happened.
Sure. Sure.
But there were other things going on.
Really?
Mary.
Yeah. It was, I was stunned. It was in Long Island.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a club?
Yeah. Set up just like a club. More like a loungy type club because, you know, of course you want to be comfortable if you're going to be doing that type of stuff, right?
Right.
So, but I was amazed. I was absolutely amazed.
No, please explain the amazement.
Like,
factor.
I was amazed by the, by the, you know, the exhibitionists that were there. It was amazing. I was like, really?
Well, no.
Are you people really, like, this open? I was like, I would go back.
Really?
Oh, definitely. I hope you know what I know.
From candlelight visuals to turn off the lights.
Victoria's Secret by day, Fredericks of Hollywood by night.
She went from candlelight vigils to candle wax. That's exactly what this is.
I don't like that.
No.
So
you've tried it. Yes,
I have.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Mary.
Let me ask you this. So that being said, okay. So was there, and I hate asking this because it's going to sound a little intrusive.
Look, even you're amazed. That's why you're asking me.
No, I'm not amazed.
Like,
no, no, I'm
wow,
not amazed.
Can we
go
there?
No, I'm
show
not.
Show me where it is.
No, I don't want to go there. I'm not amazed about
it. I do.
I'm amazed. Yeah, you do, JC. I'm not amazed at the fact that it goes on. I'm actually appalled that it does. Here's what I'm amazed at.
To each his own, though.
I understand, and again, I got nothing against that. I'm asking. I'm amazed that you found this interesting, and I'm hesitant to ask you my follow up question, but I have to.
Go ahead.
Because I do interviews. Was there on your part? any interest, arousal. Well, they can't hear what you just did. Respond.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
The question was, were you interested and or aroused by what it is you saw?
I definitely was. And I cannot believe I just answered that question on air.
Wow.
Don't feel bad, Mary. My job at one point was without saying any names, Mary, my job, like I said, don't feel bad. My job at one point was going to be to follow someone to a club and watch them dance. Recall that?
What was that?
My job at one point was going to be to follow someone with a camera to a club in Philly.
And watch them dance.
With a drag queen.
JC.
I don't even think I want to know that. But here's my other question.
Oh, God. Here's the follow-up.
Do I know this person?
Yes, I think you do.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me? I never, ever. Blah, blah, blah. JC, are you talking about what I think you're talking about?
Are you talking about Reese?
Yes, he is talking about
Reese. Oh, my God.
You are totally misinforming people about that story. The deal was I was supposed
What was
to
my job to do?
Your job, okay, your job was to go. I lost a bet, I was supposed to go to Philadelphia, and according to what it is that they wanted me to do, it was for a certain amount of money. What would I do for a certain amount of money? And what was the amount of money that I was offered? No. What was I offered? How much money was I offered?
I think somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000.
I thought it was more than that, but you might be right. Okay, so I was offered $5,000 to go to a club in Philly, a gay club, and I had to dance with a drag queen on the dance floor to win $5,000, and the only way that I could prove it is if JC went with me to Philadelphia and filmed the entire thing, and then we would put it on the internet. It was like, what would I do for $5,000? And I do believe the ante went up on they were daring me to do it. This is what I was doing the other morning show with Star and Buck Wild, and Star was trying to suggest that he could get me to do certain things for a certain amount of money, and the ante kept going up. Would you do it for this much? Would you do it for that much? And as the money kept going up, I was going, you know what? For that money, all right, I'll do it. So the whole idea was I was supposed to go to this gay bar and be photographed. I had to have my shirt off, too.
I forgot about that one. Yeah, you're right.
I had to have my shirt off, and I had to dance with a drag queen in Abbotsville.
I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, I bet you would have.
What's your question?
My question to you was, and because we're going to go to the top of the hour, this was, to you, was this live porn or was this more than that?
What do you mean?
Like, do you equate it with just watching porn and being aroused? I hate using that word. Is it just like watching porn in front of you and being aroused? Or, when we come back, you answer the question. What was the interest? This is the New Edition song I was talking about.
Profit. prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it, grab it.
Short.
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?
It's Therapy Thursday right here.
Good night, everybody.
On Reese on the Radio, live on blogtalkradio.com. And, of course, I don't have anything this week. I've got my own personal issues, of course, but there's nothing that I need any therapy on. James was supposed to call in today because he had an issue he had been wanting to bring up for weeks. But for some odd reason, he is MIA, missing in action, of course. And we can't find him. I know he changed his number, but I don't have it in front of me. But whatever, we'll take care of it tomorrow. But JC, our intrepid producer, appears to have his own therapy problem today. And look, I always said I'm not omnipotent. I don't know everything. I used to date his moms, but I don't know everything. You never heard of that? You don't get that?
No.
I don't know everything. I used to date his mother. In other words, I only dated his mother. I never met everything. I just dated his mother.
Okay.
In other words, I'm referring to everything as a person.
I
said I don't know everything, but I used to date his mother.
This is the closest I
got to knowing everything.
I got you.
Do I have to clear that up for you?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was a blonde moment.
Apparently.
Oh, my God.
JC is having some issue that he'd like to share with. And I don't know what this is, so I'll be hearing it for the first time. So, JC, what is your dilemma that you need therapy on?
Well, it's really not so much a dilemma.
Okay.
I'm going to have an issue with how I feel BET is going to handle this whole Whitney Houston tribute.
But I'm not understanding that, because BET has already dedicated, like, I guess, a show where they will chronicle her life. I mean, that's what BET is going to do. But would you really suggest that BET bear some responsibility in chronicling her life? She was not a black entertainment artist.
They're getting ready to shoot the BET Awards. Not the Hip Hop Awards, but the BET Awards.
Well, sure.
And even though at some point Black America did turn their backs on Whitney Houston because they said she didn't sound black enough.
That was in the beginning of her
career. I do
recall
BET playing all of her music, though.
Say again?
I do recall BET playing all of her music.
I don't know. Saving All My Love for You, The Greatest Love of All, those songs they played. They did not play songs like So Emotional. I get so emotional, baby. They didn't play that.
You don't think so?
No, I know they didn't.
Okay.
I mean, if they did, I'm sure they played it in the afternoon hours. Or in the early morning hours, but that was a VH1 song. And the only reason why I like that song, I love the bass, I love the musicality on that song. If you listen to that music and listen to it in very high definition or hi-fi stereo, the music on that song, the performers on that song are crazy. The music in that song is great. I don't care much for the song, but I listen to the song for the musicality. The arrangement, I should say. But BET, how much could they dedicate to a woman they really did not celebrate unless she was doing a club
differ.
They did not celebrate Whitney Houston.
I beg to differ with you. I sincerely beg to differ. We didn't even get VH1.
Okay, so you're concerned with how
VH1 came back when? Came around when?
After MTV. BET is after VH1.
No, I think we're wrong.
It's MTV, VH1, and then BET.
Yeah, I'm positive of it.
I have to look into that again. My thing is, I just don't want Ms. Deborah Lee over at BET to louse this one up because the Grammys dropped the ball.
Well,
I think that the Grammys dropped the ball because they didn't. I mean, how much timing did they really have?
Exactly.
How much timing did BET have left to Michael? Come on. They did an awesome tribute to Michael.
Yeah, but
put together in no time on a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
On a shoestring budget.
Here's what I'm asking.
And Michael, to be honest, really wasn't a BET artist either.
No, you're probably right about that. But what is your dilemma? Like you think that they're not going to be able to do.
They're not going to do her justice.
They're not going to do her justice.
Exactly.
And why does that bother you?
Why does it bother me?
Yeah, please.
Because you take artists for example. Like okay, BT already they already lost things up by sticking Jay-Z up on their masthead. Along with the likes of Oprah Winfrey, Michelle Obama, Martin Luther King, and Quincy Jones. Jigga's got no business being there.
Right.
I could think they'd put Morgan Freeman, Cicely Tyson, Sidney Poitier, or somebody like that. I'll even take Denzel. They have a way of lousing things up over there.
Let me apologize. You're 100% right. And I'm going to make sure that I get this right. Is this really right?
You can't rely on Wikipedia.
Why not?
Because on Wikipedia, I can go in there and make changes to anything that I want.
No. If it's not verified, I think 10 times by 10 people, it doesn't go up there. I was a part of Puffy's life for about 10 years until me and Puffy's situation disappeared. You're right. You can go in there and edit it. But nowadays, you can't put anything up there unless it's been verified at least 5 times.
Well,
five to 10 times.
According to Wikipedia, and if I'm getting this right, I swear to you, I'm stunned. But according to Wikipedia, BET is before MTV and VH1.
Yes.
January 25th, 1980, launched by Robert L. Johnson.
Yeah.
And MTV started in 81 and VH1 in 85.
Wow.
So BET was first. Interesting.
But what year did Whitney come out? That's the question.
Now, Whitney Houston's first song, that is probably going to be somewhere in the mid-80s. If I were to look at her discography, early career... Huh. Let me see. According to this, backup singer, Life's a Party, age 15, Chaka Khan. She sang background vocals on Chaka Khan's hit single, I'm Every Woman, which she would end up singing herself. Early 80s, she worked as a fashion model. Previously offers a life. Houston had previously been offered several recording agencies. Let me see. Elektra Records in 1981. However, her mother declined the offer, stating her daughter must first complete high school. Houston signed with Arista Records in 1983, but did not begin work on her album immediately. The label wanted to make sure no other label signed the singer away. Clive Davis wanted to ensure that he had the right material, the producers on Houston's album. Houston's first record debut with Teddy Pendergrass, entitled Hold Me, which appeared on the album Love Language. The single was released in 1984, and Houston got her first taste of success, becoming a top 5 R&B single with producer Michael Messer. The first debut album, Whitney Houston, was released in February of 1985. So
she didn't really come until the damn right the VH1 generation.
Yeah, well, 1985, we're looking at her first album. She had that song, All at Once. That was a big record.
Mm-hmm.
You Give Good Love. Okay, that was an R&B song.
The first one you titled, what you did too.
All at Once was a ballad.
No,
yeah, it was an R&B song, though. I mean, yeah, they play it on light favorites now.
That was a ballad, so you can't really consider that. But You Give Good Love, that music is, this says, in the U.S., the soulful ballad, You Give Good Love, was chosen as the lead single from Houston's debut to establish her in the black marketplace first. Outside the U.S., the song failed to get enough attention to become a hit. Within the U.S., it gave the album its first major hit. It peaked at number 3 and number 1 on the Hot R&B chart. As a result, on late-night television talk shows, which were not usually accessible to unestablished black acts, the jazz ballad Saving All My Love for You was released next, and it became Houston's first number 1 single. So that's what made her, okay? That's what made her a pop icon. Saving All My Love For You was the song that took over there. How Will I Know? Another pop record. That was the next single. That peaked at number 1.
On what chart?
The third U.S. single. Yeah, Saving All My Love For You was number 2. Third U.S. single, How Will I Know, peaked at number 1 and introduced Houston to the MTV audience thanks to its video. Houston's subsequent singles from this and future albums would make her the first African-American female artist to receive consistent heavy rotation on MTV. By 1986, a year after its initial release, Whitney Houston topped the Billboard 200 album chart and stayed there for 14 non-consecutive weeks. The first single, Greatest Love of All, became Houston's biggest hit. After peaking number 1 and retaining there for 3 weeks on the Hot 100 list, which made her debut first album by a female artist to yield 3 number 1 hits, Houston was number 1 artist of the year. Whitney Houston was the number 1 album of the year in 1986, Billboard year-end charts, making her the first female artist to earn that distinction. Then she had the Greatest Love Tour at the 1986 Grammy Awards. Houston was nominated for 3 awards, including Album of the Year. She was not eligible for Best New Artist category due to a previous hit R&B that the song she came out with, Teddy Pendergrass. She won her first Grammy Award and Best Pop Performance, Saving All My Love For You, a pop record. She had no BET. There's nothing here that talks about her BET success. It was all MTV. I'm Your Baby Tonight and the Star-Spangled Banner. That's in 1987 to 91. She was produced by Jellybean Benitez. I Want to Dance with Somebody was a massive hit worldwide, peaked at number 1. Didn't We Almost Have It All? So Emotional. Again, another song that I like musically. Where Do Broken Hearts Go? I'm going through every one of them. Soldier, I'm following the release of the album. Houston embarked on a Moment of Truth tour. Was it Nelson Mandela, Wembley Stadium? What are you pointing at?
The Madison Square Garden. I think that was a concert that I saw.
Oh, is that the one you went to? Yeah, so none of this stuff.
1988,
yep. None of this stuff remotely even goes to, what's the name? The BET Awards. In fact, in 1989, we're talking just 3 years into her career, at the 1989 Soul Train Music Awards, when Houston's name was called out for the nomination, a few in the audience cheered. Houston defended herself against criticism, stating, "If you're going to have a long career, there's a certain way to do it, and I did it that way. I'm not ashamed of it." Houston took a more urban direction with her third album, I'm Your Baby Tonight, released in November of 1990. She produced and chose producers for this album as a result. Featured productions from L.A. Reid and Babyface, Luther Vandross, and Stevie Wonder. The album showed Houston's versatility on a new batch of tough rhythmic grooves, soulful ballads, and up-tempo dance tracks. Reviews were mixed. Rolling Stone felt it was her best and most integrated album. Entertainment Weekly at the time thought Houston's shift towards an urban direction was superficial. The album contained I'm Your Baby Tonight, All the Man I Need. These were all ballads. Miracle, My Name Is Not Susan was probably the most urban song that she had. I do remember that.
But I mean, you're speaking as though ballads can't be R&B.
Yeah, but not if they're revered in the pop audience. They weren't revered. These were ballads.
I think you look. I think you need to look at the R&B charts themselves. But regardless, the Grammys dropped the ball on this on this tribute, and BET sure as hell claiming her now. And if they're going to do it, they need to do it right. And what I mean by doing it right, I mean keeping folks like, no Shanties, no Sierras, and as much as I love her, no Keisha Coles, no Marsha Ambrosias, Whitney didn't howl. And if they're going to do it, they need to do it right. I mean, Deborah Lee needs to go take out a Rolodex and look up some numbers for some deep, dark soul sisters.
The entire night. Listen, who's going to sing? I Want to Dance with Somebody. Who's going to sing that song?
I would give that to Brandy. I got the show produced for her.
You're going to tell me Brandy sings I Want to Dance with Somebody?
Absolutely.
You
can't see Brandy singing I Want to Dance with Somebody. Brandy. Or How Will I Know?
Or Cousin? Or...
These songs, these artists that are out today, they can't sing these songs.
No, that's my point exactly. So you take Marsha Ambrosia, you take Sierra, you take even my baby Keisha Cole, who I love dearly.
Love Keisha.
You tell them the show's going to be in L.A., and then you put the show on in New York. Keep them as far away from the building as you can. You go and get some singers like Regina Bell, Mickey Howard, Deborah Cox, Tamia. You're going to get some real singers to do this.
These are all virtual unknowns. BET can't do
virtual
that.
Virtual unknowns?
Oh, when I say virtual, I'm sorry. The names that you're bringing
Mickey
out.
Mickey Howard?
I'm sorry. The people that you're mentioning are not going, no one's going, no. And I got to be honest, because it's Therapy Thursday, and this is just going to take some real, real true therapy here. Let me explain something.
No.
It's going to take some true therapy here, JC, and I got to do it.
Listen, I've thought this whole show out.
I'm sure you did, but you know what? See, unfortunately for you in this regard, see, you really know the art of song. So you know singers, you know producers, you know.
I've been
doing
radio since I was 16 years old.
You've been doing radio since you were 16. So
and you know, my show's been basically have been ballad. My show's overnight. It was a,
and this
in fact,
gives
I,
you 25 I, years of experience, JC, and you know the authenticity, I should say, of what music should be. Unfortunately, BET needs draw. So what are they going to do?
The only person I would actually put on this particular show, the only person I think that could probably do I Will Always Love You some justice, and I wouldn't even put, as much as I love her too, Jennifer Hudson, I love her to death. I think she's the new voice of R&B.
That's true, but they're going to snooze. BET knows that the audience is going to snooze if they put on a Tamia. They know they're going to snooze if they put on a Deborah Cox. Because I know these young kids, if they watch that celebration on BET, the first thing they're going to go, who's this? Who's that? I don't know her. She sings? I ain't never heard nothing about her. She ain't nobody. BET has
because
got...
Because it's a tribute to Whitney, they're going to watch regardless.
No, they don't care about that. I'm not talking about... The audience may care, but BET doesn't care about that. They want to know who are the hottest female acts that we can put on there. And unfortunately... They can't put on a Celine Dion to perform. They're going to have to bring... Of course, Aretha Franklin will come out there. Of course, Chaka Khan will come out there.
Well, they can speak. I don't even want Chaka Khan there. In fact, singing I Want Every Woman, I want Frenchie.
Oh, my goodness.
You don't want... See, but then again, who are they going to get? They're going to bring Fantasia.
I can't... Please don't do that.
I love me some Fantasia.
Oh, my God, I cannot stand
I can't stand Shaktasia.
Oh, I can't even listen to her
get
talk.
Get that song, Hood Boy, for me. I
can't
that.
Even
I need
listen
a hood
to her
boy.
Talk.
Shaptasia.
You do not love no song called I Need a Hood Boy.
I Need a Hood Boy. Now, that beat is crazy.
Oh, okay. You might like
that. Yeah,
he
did like that.
That beat is crazy. Boom,
ba doom,
ba doom,
ba doom. Mr. Republican.
That beat's hot.
Mr. Conservative Republican talking about I need a hood boy.
No, I don't need a hood boy. I just said the song.
Well, we're gonna pull that damn card tonight.
we sure are gonna pull that card.
Nobody's pulling any cards.
You pulled it yourself. You relinquished it just
boom,
now.
Boom, ba-doom, ba-doom. Nah, the beat is crazy.
No, the beat is funky. The beat is funky.
That beat is hot.
Yeah, but how can you even listen to her? I can't stand to listen to her talk.
Her voice makes the hair in the back of my neck stand up.
And
I think
she's so annoying.
Voice. I know her voice is annoying, but she's got a great voice.
She does not.
She looks like Shaquille O'Neal.
But
I love it.
Look,
I call her Shaptasia.
Well, Shaquille may have more hair than she's got, though.
Look, you said Shaquille's got more hair than her? That's just awful.
Wow. No, the only one I would actually put up there to sing I'll Always Love You if they want somebody hot on the show would be Beyonce. And
well,
I think she could pull it off.
They're going to bring Beyonce. Beyonce's going to be the one that they hold everybody out. If it's a one-hour special, if it's a two-hour special, they're going to put Beyonce at the hour-and-a-half mark. That's where they're going to put her. They're going to drag everybody in. They're going to bring out all of these ne'er-do-wells that nobody seems to care about.
No,
and then they're going to put,
no.
Yes, they are. You
We're
don't
talking
listen.
Music purists
sure.
that are going to be watching this show with a close eye.
Not, music purists are not going to. You want to make a statement? If you put Adele on that bill, you will get a mainstream audience that no one is able. Adele goes out there, Adele will sing Oh, I Want to Dance with Somebody. Adele will sing those pop hits and give it some funk. Get that
she
band out
the
there
voice
playing.
For it.
Yes, she does,
man. I'm
no,
not
you no.
BET is looking for a draw. They want a draw. They're going to get Adele on there. Because you know what it is that I know about black people and the people who watch BET? You bring in Adele, and they know that Adele's from England. They love English singers who have soul. That's
yeah.
the reason why Lisa Stansfield was a star.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But if Bob Johnson's still on BET and not Viacom, I'd have my way.
Don't you send him an email, JC?
He doesn't own
well,
it anymore.
I already did. I told Jeff, I said, look, if she louses up this this tribute, she may be running BED today, but she'll be frying fish tomorrow.
You press me with your cold shoulder. Whenever you look at me, you wish I was there. You shot me with a word in the middle of night. Whenever you look at me, you wish I was there. You press me with your cold shoulder.
She's amazing. She's amazing. I don't
something about a thick white woman. Just,
I ain't gonna lie. I'm telling you, when I saw her, I saw how big she was. I'm not gonna lie. But when she finished the performance, and you gotta watch it yourself, and I know you have, JC, but she gives this little shy little look after she sings, like such a big voice, and she puts this little shy look on her face, and I see that, and I'm just like, literally, I fell in love with her, and I look for that song. I'm not gonna lie. I listened to her album, Adele. And it's not so much to get off the subject of Whitney Houston, but I got to be honest. I listened to her album very much like Whitney Houston. I didn't like one song. But there's no denying Whitney Houston's voice. You'll never hear me say, yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Whitney Houston's music, to me personally, sucked. But her voice, you can't compare it.
No.
It is a classic voice. I may not have liked the music, but I appreciate the talent. That's because, you know, I'm going to be an honest guy. No, I did not ever buy a Whitney Houston song. She's never, ever been on my iPod. That's true. But can I, if someone would say, what, you don't like Whitney Houston? I would say, no, don't get me wrong. Whitney Houston is a singer. She is probably one of the best ever in our lifetime.
No. She's not a singer. She's a sanger. There's a difference.
She sang better than anybody I've ever heard. Her range, her voice, it was impossible to believe.
She does not sing better than anybody you've ever heard.
During that time? I don't think anybody compared to her voice.
Maybe during that time.
She was a voice. No, I'm not talking about today. I'm just saying at that particular time, at the height of her career, no one matched that voice.
Maybe at that time, but before.
She has an irreplaceable voice is what it is.
Exactly. It's incomparable.
One that cannot be matched by anybody else.
Exactly. In my era, she's incomparable. That being said,
prior to our era,
there were plenty out there.
Come on.
Billie Holiday, for crying out loud, you know. But that being said,
she's like Luther. She's got a voice that'll never be duplicated.
Never be matched, and they may try. But see, again, I didn't like one of her songs, but I appreciate her talent and recognize her talent. That being said about Adele, and that's the reason why I give Adele so much credit. I can't stand any music. I listened to two, three of her albums, whatever it was. I listen to those albums, and I'm trying to find a song because I love her voice. So I'm looking for stuff that I might hear that I like.
But you have to love other things about, I mean, just the different stuff that she does, the ranges that she goes into,
But I don't like the songs because they don't capture me. The reason why I like this song...
But the beats capture you.
No, those beats don't... And the beats don't capture me. The only reason why I like this song is because the live performance is way better than the recorded performance. The studio performance is awful. And we watched that, and I still tell you, like I said, this live performance, something about it was catchier, more rhythmic. It spoke to me. This will be the only song I'll ever play by Adele that I'll be in love with, but nothing else. And I don't like her music. I have to say that.
I love
but her voice.
Music. I absolutely love her.
And I like
I
the song.
I love
that,
all the different ranges she goes into. I can. It's absolutely amazing.
Oh, well. Look.
But I listen to not just beats. But I love to hear people that can actually sing, that have a voice. It touches me. It makes my soul light up.
I hear you.
It's like Stephanie Mills. No one will ever have that voice.
Nope, they sure
won't. Stephanie Mills track.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't like her music, but I love her. It's my new girlfriend. I love you, Adele. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the show. It's Lisa on the Radio.
I tried a lot of cars, Ford Pinto, the Pontiac Fiero, but the Volt was the first car that truly got me excited and looking into the prospect of buying American again. Yeah, I've heard they're catching on fire in some cases, but I found that the fire really helps me get to my destination faster for fear of my life. Also, people really move out of the way when giant hunks of metal are hurtling towards them. Probably the one thing that sold me on the car. I'm really proud of what GM has been able to accomplish by working with the Obama administration. They've proven that in America you can make it in any business as long as you have unlimited financial resources and the backing of the United States government. I don't know about you, but I think that's more than worth a couple $100,000 it costs taxpayers every time somebody buys one of these suckers. I'm sorry, do you smell something?
I wish Black History Month was over already. And I don't mean over at the end of the month. I wish Black History Month was over for all time. I know. I just spoke heresy in the eyes of liberals and Afrocentrics. I don't care. And I can hear them now accusing me of making a statement I made so I can get approval and acknowledgement from white folks. Really? Aren't you the ones who demand to have a month set aside so white folks can acknowledge you? You're the ones desperate for recognition from white folks. You want these white Democrats to give you reparations and affirmative action and whatnot. I don't need any of these things you demand from white folks.
Don't lie.
I don't need a feel-good month set aside for me. I'm happy about being black all year long. I celebrate being an American all year long. I don't need a month set aside for me to boost my self-esteem. As the saying goes, Jesus already thinks I'm to die for. Why would I celebrate Black History Month when it would be racist to have a White History Month? I mean, to be fair, American history is pretty much taught to us as white history. So we really don't need a White History Month. But the reason why we don't know that much about Black history is because the school system is dominated by the Democrat Party, who has a history of segregating Black people. So it only makes sense that they would segregate a month for Black people. And in this special month, Democrats oversee what you know about Black history. And one thing they don't want you to know about is the true relationship of Blacks and Republicans and Blacks as Republicans. Along with Black History Month, I do not like having channels like BET, when it would be seen as racist to have WET.
But
again, to be fair, television has always been white entertainment television. Hollywood is totally racist, and they're dependent on keeping people in a certain box so as to maintain their entertainment formula. White liberal mecca Comedy Central calls themselves throwing Black folks a bone with their new comedy show called Key and Peele. Now, I get called a sellout while Key and Peele happily take money to promote the so-called Black stereotype on Comedy Central. Look, y'all, I totally understand that we have some cultural differences, and it's a beautiful thing about our country worth celebrating. But giving a culture special treatment leads to resentment, not celebration. Y'all, there are many Black heroes to celebrate in American history. I'm not saying you shouldn't acknowledge and learn about them. I'm saying that the Black community has settled for a month as if it were a tribal reservation on a calendar. Or even worse, it's a February plantation where the Democrats milk their stock for voter loyalty. I'm Alfonso Rachel for Zone Nation, where we conservative Blacks don't celebrate Black history once a year. We make American history every day.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and I know you've got an opinion, so give yours. The number 347-308-8701. 347-308-8701, right here on Reese on the radio.
Yes, love hurts. It can hurt emotionally, but more important, it can also hurt you physically. It can hurt you in a way which nobody who owns a hot tub and lives in California can afford to be unaware of. Yes, I'm talking about California hot tub rectal gonorrhea. This painful, incurable disease can make an enjoyable soak in a hot tub with family, friends, and dog into a literally unforgettable experience. If you catch California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, not only will you walk around feeling like you're about to pass a twisted sardine can lid, you'll also smell like a pile of burning tractor tires. So don't jump out of the frying pan and into the hot tub, because if you get California hot tub rectal gonorrhea, it'll really burn your ass.
This has been a public service message brought to you by the Citizens Against CHTRG Foundation. California Hot Tub Rectal Gonorrhea. We're not going to take it sitting down.
Hello, Lois. This is Mike. I'm the personnel director here at your husband's work.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. And how are you?
Fine.
Lois, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Well, I have some bad news.
What do you mean, bad news? Bob's okay, isn't he?
Well, actually, that's why I called to talk to you. It's about Bob, and I know that he's been an employee here for a very long time, but I'm afraid we're going to have to let Bob go.
What do you mean? Wait, that's not very fair. He's been very loyal to you.
Look, I can understand you feeling that way.
Feeling that way? You don't understand. We just had a baby.
No, I understand that.
This is a very hard time to do this kind of a thing.
Yes, it is, but Bob has kind of forced our hand on this.
Why are you firing him?
We caught him doing his secretary on his office desk.
Oh, that son of a bitch!
Look, I know you're upset.
Upset is not the word! That stupid, rotten son of a bitch! I can't believe this!
He's on his way home right now, and he's gonna need your support.
Support my f***ing head! I'm gonna change the locks on the door. I'm throwing his shit outside on the front lawn. He can just have it all. I'm not even gonna be here when he gets back. And now, I don't feel so bad about f***ing his brother.
Lois. It's a joke. Your husband put us up. It's your birthday.
Happy birthday!
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them.
He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
Hey, what's up, guys? We're back. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on blogtalkradio.com. It's actually checking out some news in the background here. News is always happening. Let me say something. Now that I have the fans. To a guy by the name of
Matula Abu. Why am I forgetting his name? Matula Ablingata. No. Matula Ablingata is a place in Ukraine.
I know.
What is his name? Abdullah Matala.
Yeah, the underwear bomber.
That's correct, Mary. The underwear bomber. That's right. Abdullah Matala. Now, I've always made this argument that people always want to bring up weapons of mass destruction. WMDs. And Abdullah Matala is responsible for strapping a bomb in his underwear.
A bomb to his balls.
Really? We're going there now? So he puts a bomb in his underwear. Has to light a match and kaboom.
Wait.
Yes, he has to light a match. You didn't know that? Oh, what did you think? It was one of those things where he just grabs himself and
what?
It just goes off?
A remote? Something?
No,
call
not
a cell phone?
No.
Something?
No.
So you strap a bomb to your balls.
Hey, could
and
you
now
stop
you
using
have to,
that terminology?
But that's, it's the truth.
Testicles. We like
okay.
to use the clinical term
Excuse
here.
Me. You strap a bomb to your testes.
We don't even say that. That's even a little too offensive.
Okay. You strap a bomb. Offensive is the fact that you're getting on a plane strapping a bomb in your drawers.
Thank you.
Offensive.
That's
offensive in
anyway,
itself.
He doesn't.
And then you have to light your testicles aflame.
You have to light the fuse,
which
would then go to the testicles. And then you would feel quite the burning sensation.
What? Right before the blow up.
The
sensation.
Big kaboom. Right.
So,
I'm not making light
of it. And not the kind of kaboom.
Yes, not the
that
kind
usually
of kaboom
goes
that
along,
guys look along. Yeah, exactly.
That goes along with those areas.
Yes.
But, okay, so if he had to light a match.
Yes.
He had the underwear on, correct?
Yes, the underwear's wearing
he
the
had
underwear.
Pants on top
charred
of the
mountain oysters.
Pardon?
Charred mountain oysters.
Oh, God.
Goodness gracious.
There you go with those mountain oysters again.
So, yeah, he has to light a match.
Okay, so where was he going to, what was he going to do, go in the bathroom?
Oh, no. He was doing it right there in the chair, right in the seats.
So was
he was subdued by.
Wait a minute. So was he going to take his pants down right there in the seat?
No.
Was there a long fuse that was hanging out of his zipper?
I think he probably opened up his trousers to, you know, to expose the underwear that was on there. He was going to scream, you know, Allahu Akbar, set off the match, and kaboom. And someone smelled something burning, grabbed him, subdued him, put the fuse out, guy burned.
Oh, he had already, I didn't know that.
He was on the plane. The plane
but he had already lit it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was the reason why they stopped him. People jumped on him and subdued him and put the fuse out. And
that was quick action.
And this is as the plane is descending into Detroit.
That was cool. I mean, did somebody jump on top of him with a bottle of water?
I'll never forget that.
With a bottle of water? I mean,
no, I don't know what they did, but I'm sure that
thank
they
thank God it wasn't vodka.
Yeah. Anyway. So Abdullah Matala has been convicted of the underwear bombing.
Five
consecutive life sentences. Now, do you know what are the charges that he had levied at him during his trial?
Obviously not, because I didn't even know he had lit himself a plane.
One of the charges he had against him was being in possession of a weapon.
Of mass destruction.
Then it's fair to say that the definition of weapon of mass destruction, in this case, is a bomb
strapped
in his underwear.
Strapped to your testicles.
So that's a small amount of an explosive, correct?
Not when that small amount of explosive can do the harm.
Oh, it's what the explosive can do, right?
Yeah, of course.
What can it do?
I don't know what the...
Take down the plane?
Oh, yeah.
Cause the plane to crash?
Yeah.
Possibly kill 153 people?
Oh, even more.
What's the definition of mass?
A large amount.
What's large amount? Let's look it up. Let's take some time So look up the definition of the word mass. If we may, let's go to dictionary.com and look up the definition of mass. And according, a body of coherent matter, usually of indefinite shape and often of considerable size. A mass of dough, a collection of incoherent parties, parts, or objects.
Not parties, a collection of incoherent particles.
Incoherent particles, I apologize. Parts or objects regarded as forming one body. A mass of sand. People in the mass mean well. A considerable assemblance. Number or quantity. A mass of errors. A mass of troops. Bulk, size, expanse, or massiveness. Towers of great mass and strength. Pertaining to, involving, or affecting a large number of people, a mass unemployment, mass migrations, mass murder.
Well, that's the adjective.
What's a mass murder?
Affecting a large number of people.
So would a 757 be a weapon of mass destruction? Flying into the North and South Tower, the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania?
When used in that manner, yes.
Used as a weapon, of course.
Right. How about Faisal Shahzad, the Times
Bomber.
Square? No, the Times Square bomber.
No, okay. He was a Times Square bomber. Okay.
Who put a bomb in the back of a Nissan Pathfinder at Times Square.
Wasn't this just recently?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was in New York at
Were
that
you?
Time.
At the time?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
2 years ago this was.
Right? Yeah, it's probably, about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He was charged with weapon of mass destruction.
The one he lived in Connecticut, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I ask you, that's a weapon of mass destruction.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So we have a car bomb, an underwear bomb.
A girl's bomb.
Sounds like a mix for a good stiff drink.
So I'm going to ask you this. What's 5 tons of yellow cake uranium?
Sounds like a weapon of mass destruction.
Do you know
like what Timothy McVeigh used?
No, he didn't. But he used C4. Do you know so 5 tons of yellow cake uranium, right? So I'm going to type 5 tons of yellow cake uranium found. Look at that. Look at this story that pops up. Secret U.S. mission hauls uranium from Iraq.
Iraq, right.
What's the date?
September 11th, 2011.
What's the date, man?
According to the Associated Press, this was updated July 5th of 2008.
The last major remnant of Saddam Hussein's nuclear program, a huge stockpile of concentrated nuclear uranium. Natural uranium reached the Canadian port Saturday to complete a U.S. secret operation that included a 2-week airlift from Baghdad and a ship voyage across two oceans. The removal of 550 metric tons of yellow cake. The seed material for higher grade nuclear enrichment was a significant step toward closing the books on Saddam Hussein's nuclear legacy. Is it fair to say that Iraq had a WMD?
Damn near.
Maybe not that they had a WMD, but they had the ability to construct
550 metric tons.
But you have to do something with that.
It's yellow.
Well, they might have not have had all the ingredients in one place, but I'm sure the country overall had all the ingredients needed, just not in one spot.
What's the core ingredient for a nuclear weapon?
I'm assuming that it's
uranium.
uranium.
That's correct. Now, if Abdullah Muttalib has an underwear bomb, and it's called the weapon of mass destruction, and Faisal Shahzad puts a very, very ill-constructed bomb in the back of a Nissan Pathfinder, and those two get charged with harboring or using a weapon of mass destruction, how in the hell does anybody say that George W. Bush lied about Saddam Hussein having a weapon of mass destruction when here the Associated Press, a very liberal organization, reports in July of 2008 that they found 550 metric tons of yellow cake uranium in Saddam Hussein's stockpile?
Okay, but I don't...
That was never really widely publicized.
No, it was not.
Because you wouldn't hear all these stupid comedians.
If I recollect correctly, said himself that they didn't find any weapons of mass destruction.
Well, actually, he never said that. He said that using the term weapons of mass destruction was ill-advised. But the truth of the matter is that 550 tons of yellow cake uranium sounds like a weapon of mass destruction if you could count an underwear bomb and a car bomb in Times Square as weapons of mass destruction. I think this constitutes, doesn't it?
Of course it was.
How many stories are you seeing here on that story? Truth or Fiction? Urban Dictionary? These are the news stories. That's one from MSNBC that actually was taken from the Associated Press. This is from Urban... Crooks and Liars? Where are the major news organizations on this story?
I found it on Snopes.
You found it on Snopes?
Yeah, we found it on here, too.
Where are the news...
This is probably the most recent.
Where are these stories? Why did I not find one story on this anywhere? Two pages on Google.
I found it on MSNBC.
Yeah,
because the Associated Press was the only place that printed it. Why wasn't it anywhere? I found the story, but you found it nowhere. And you ask anyone who ever argues with you
when
about
did you
the war
find
in Iraq,
this story?
I knew the story years ago.
So why are
because
you just now bringing it up?
I'll tell you how I found it. It was in the Boston Globe. The article was the size of a fist.
But why are you just now bringing it up?
No, I'm bringing it up because I'm just saying that Abdullah Muttalib, who is now going to be spending the rest of his life and his 5-4 afterlives in prison, that the bottom line is that if we can call what he did using a weapon of mass destruction and 550 metric tons of yellow
they
cake
found
uranium.
Far less.
Pardon?
I'm going to say they found far less in weapons of mass destruction under this administration than they did under the last administration, yet it was never reported on.
Right. Why was it never reported? But my point is that here's this guy that's, you know, everyone's talking about him serving life. In fact, they're trying to keep that story down. But the bottom line was that he was charged with having a weapon of mass destruction. It's not even in his story. They never even talk about the fact that he was charged with having a weapon of mass destruction. But he was. If you look at every one of his charges, it's sitting there.
It was on the news this morning.
Did he had a weapon of mass destruction? What did they say? What was the weapon of mass destruction? His underwear bomb.
Yes.
He was charged with having a weapon of mass destruction, they said?
Yeah.
I'd like to see that report.
It was on this morning. We watched the news.
I did not see that. I would like to see it again. But he'll serve 5 terms in jail. I got to be honest with you. I would rather see him dead.
Than pay your tax dollars to keep him in jail.
It's an act of war.
Yeah, it's an act of war. Without question, hell. If I'm not mistaken, Clinton was at one point, and to my understanding, I can't remember where it was, that Clinton was going to see Gaddafi's contribution to Farrakhan as an act of war?
Sure.
Some monies?
That's correct.
It's an act of war. It is.
And the fact that he did it at the behest of a known terrorist, that a known terrorist is now deemed responsible for sending Abdullah Muttalib to the U.S. on that plane with a bomb strap
to his balls,
to his nether regions. Do you have to use that term? Be a lady. Crying out loud.
Oh, like Samoa said, you're such a lady.
Anyway, but that's it. That's all I can say about it. You know.
One of my family countrymen, too, Nigerian.
Yeah, well, I personally hope that he does not have a pleasant stay
in Colorado.
Yeah, because he's going to Colorado.
And if they're
in a federal prison in Colorado.
And they're not going to put, I mean, they would have to put him in solitary confinement. Because somebody is going to do something to him.
Well,
no, because you know what? They don't really, I mean, as much as they really don't have anything else to do in prison, many of them won't even recognize who the hell he is until he says
what he's done.
They'll know. Those federal guys, they know. They pay attention to that stuff.
Send it behind a Frisco. Let them do his hair. Put him in makeup.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Well,
and then parade him back to Nigeria.
Yeah, let's get out of here. I got to pay homage to my guys, New Edition. Where are they performing? They're going to be at Mohegan Sun. Is that correct?
Mohegan Sun, yes.
They're going to be at Mohegan Sun this weekend. Is that correct?
Yep, Saturday night.
Saturday night.
Everybody
loves them.
I have to admit, I kind of like that song.
The whole album was hot.
That is a song that these guys...
Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, and Babyface.
That is a song that these guys used to sing together. Reese
all the time.
And TJ,
yeah,
and James Montgomery, the Kool-Aid Man, and Jace, and Derek, and everybody used to sing that song all the time. All
right,
when it came to our high school, the hot song was... They had just gotten rid of Bobby Brown, and their song was... Because I'm With You All the Way, which was a hot one.
Oh, that was actually a pretty good song, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this was my favorite. This will always be my favorite song ever by New Edition, and I figured I have to play it. I know it ain't Friday, but this is a
I like Any Heartbreak.
I like that music video. That's one of my favorite music videos. But this is my favorite choreographed music video of all time by New Edition. And when you watch them on stage, the way that they perform it, I love it. To the end of time. New Edition with Sorry You're Not That I totally screwed that up. Talk about being a radio guy. Here's New Edition with Sorry You're Not That Type of Girl. Oh, no, that's wrong. I screwed it up again. Okay, let me do it one more time. This is New Edition with Sorry You're Not My Kind of Girl. Right here on Reset Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.